Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carr. Iraqi President Nouri al-Maliki, after meeting with President Bush today, started coming up with some targets. Iraqi officials say they should be able to handle their own security by summertime, which would allow Americans to begin redeployments. President Bush wouldn't go quite that far.
The United States will be in Iraq so long as the government asks us to be in Iraq. This is a sovereign government. I believe that there is more training to be done.
Mr. Bush says that training would be accelerated. Can it be done that quickly? Maybe, says CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland.
If that could occur, then the threat would be one that potentially would be manageable for the Iraqi and the security forces. That still is a large if.
The Baker Commission comes out with its report on Iraq strategy next week. National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley says don't expect overnight policy changes, but weeks rather than months. Mother Nature isn't so smart. Sure can't read a calendar.
We don't see this condition here very often. Weather Service said it would be blizzard conditions, and that's exactly what it's been. There have been a number of instances of accidents and people sliding off the road. Visibility is limited, and that is just adding to an already slick situation. We've had about 4 to 6 inches of snow here in Stillwater, but areas to the north and west of us, which are also under this blizzard warning, have had more than that.
KSPI's Bill Van Ness in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Slick roads in Texas and more of it from Kansas and Arkansas up through Illinois, Indiana, into Ohio. Snow, freezing rain, sleet. Not much fun. One Democrat so far says he wants the brass ring.
I announce my candidacy to be the next president of the United States.
Tom Vilsack, governor of Iowa, tossed his hat into the ring today.
He's trying to get some name recognition. He obviously knows that Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, people like John Edwards, Senator Biden, a number of other people are going to get into the race next year, and he's trying right now to occupy a news hole to get his name around.
CBS News political consultant Dottie Lynch. Walmart had a down month for the first time in 10 years and is projecting a December sales gain of no more than 1%.
Sam Walton himself really focused the company on the consumer first. Now Walmart's upside down and inside out as they're focusing on the company first, the consumer last, and the sales are really suffering.
Bert Flickinger is a retail analyst. On Wall Street today, the Dow lost more than 4 points. The Nasdaq was off just a fraction on the day. And oil prices, by the way, $63.13 a barrel, up 67 cents on the day. You think your town has potholes. In Western Canada, a town of 1,000 people, Leader has potholes. Some are a foot deep and yards long and wide. You don't drive over them, you drive down into them and back out again. To make their point, people from the town have posed in the potholes naked. One guy sat in a canoe in the pothole. The idea, they said, to draw some attention to their road. This is CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and 2 nights in Las Vegas? And what about, you don't pay a dime for it? That's right, act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas' newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge, stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on. You know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. So stop what you're doing and call the special toll-free number, 877-33-GO-WIN. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 877-33-GO-WIN for all the exciting details. That's 877-33-GO-WIN. Call now.
American Indian-inspired names for sports teams can be controversial or praiseworthy, particularly if native tribes help out.
The Spokane Indians minor league baseball team has a new logo, developed in conjunction with the team's namesake, the Spokane Tribe of Indians. Team president Andrew Billick says the tribe gave its blessings to two designs, starting with the primary logo.
It has eagle feathers, one of the most revered symbols in the Spokane tribal culture. The alternate logo is even more unique. It is written in the Salish language, which is the Spokane Indians tribal language.
Billick says the Salish logo will be worn as a sleeve patch on every player uniform. Stephen Kaufman, CBS News, Spokane.
In Charlotte, North Carolina, a 20-year-old man with a shotgun got in the back seat, pointed the weapon at the taxi driver, and demanded his money. The driver shot the bandit dead with his pistol instead. Police in Charlotte say it appears the driver was defending himself. It'll be up to the DA to take it any further. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Okay, Sugar Muffin, this one's for me. Here, open it.
Thanks, sweetie. I love Mike, but he is so predictable.
Will I be surprised?
Not another ugly sweater.
Oh, my gosh.
It's an HP PhotoSmart printer.
This is such a surprise.
Thank you so much.
What'd you think, you're getting like another ugly sweater?
No.
Wouldn't want you to think I've become predictable or something. The HP PhotoSmart Compact Photo Printer, starting at $99. See your favorite retailer. HP. Brilliantly simple.
Okay, Mr. Cold is out there, and he's coming. What can you do? Get Dual Action Healthy Relief Cold Reduce Lozenges now. Why? Because they're dual action. They relieve your cold symptoms and are formulated to reduce the duration of your cold by days. So when Mr. Cold comes knocking, you can escort him out fast. Homeopathic Healthy Relief Cold Reduce Lozenges. A better way to feel your best, fast. Also in flu formula, at retailers everywhere. Read and follow label warnings and directions.
And will you be laughing when it's all over 3 hours from now? Let's find out together. I'm Peter B. Collins. Welcome to this edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Live, unscripted, unrehearsed, and originating on the left coast of these United States. Where I am delighted to report that the Dungeness crab are running and available at an attractive price. That's my dinner plan for tonight. We got a lot to talk about on the program today. Coming up later this hour, Bo Grosskopf, who teaches at the California State University in Chico. He teaches international relations. He's going to discuss with us the recent shootdown of an Air Force F-16 outside Baghdad and the bigger picture it suggests about the fact that we continue to use airstrikes during this not-so-civil war. Also on today's program, Jonathan Steiner from Mother Jones Magazine joins us. And we're going to talk about the amazing database, the Iraq timeline that they have constructed at the MotherJones.com website. And we'll try it out here live on the radio. Also on today's program from Global Exchange, their Iraq project director, Raed Jarar, will join us. And he's got some important questions about deals that have been made about the future of Iraq, in particular the extension of the UN occupation authorization to the United States and the alleged coalition, and whether that was legally processed by the parliament in Iraq, or if it was just a unilateral decision made by Maliki, and Iraqis would think that was done under duress in Amman, Jordan, as he met with President Bush today after blowing him off for a meeting yesterday. That's all ahead, plus your phone calls. You can call at any moment and contribute to this dialogue. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. 888-573-8372 puts you through, and we pay for the call. And you can call anytime you wish to comment or ask a question or just pipe up. And you can always email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. Every week about this time, we check in with Faz Shakir. He's co-editor of the Daily Progress Report that comes out of the Center for American Progress in Washington. You can get your own copy delivered to your email free. Just log on to progressreport.org. Faz, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I guess we didn't speak last week because it was Thanksgiving, so how was your Thanksgiving?
You weren't standing by, were you?
No,
I think,
I wasn't.
I think we failed to notify you that we were playing reruns last week.
Oh, no, I was notified.
Oh, good. But I had a fine time. It was really good, and Mom came out from Ohio to visit her boys on the West Coast, and it was just great. How about you?
I was fine. I did a lot of studying for law school exams coming up shortly, so nothing too exciting, actually. Watched a lot of football.
So are you in year three?
I am. I'm in my last semester, actually, so in December I'll be done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then will there be the Shakir Law Firm?
No. I'm trying to avoid private practice as much as I can. I'd like to go and work on a presidential campaign, perhaps, or stay here at the center where it's a great place to work. So I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to do.
Okay. Well, you're not too far from K Street there. There are a lot of jobs for non-Republicans these days.
It's very untempting for me right now. I have no desire to be the next Jack Abramoff.
Oh, good. Well, Faz, let's talk about the situation in Iraq, and we'll get to the Bush-Maliki conversation, but closer to your office there, just yesterday, Lee Hamilton of the Iraq Study Group, that's the James Baker group that is meeting, mulling, and trying to come up with some plans that the Bush administration might actually embrace. He came by for a conversation with senior CAP fellow Tom Daschle, the former Senate Majority Leader.
Right, and in the breaking news that he delivered, I guess, I'm not sure it was terribly breaking, but he said that they've now come to a decision. That's the Iraq Study Group, that they've come to a decision, and that it's a unanimous decision about what they're going to recommend. And the New York Times reported this morning that they have indications, or at least a source tells them, that they're going to recommend some sort of drawdown that begins next year. And I think, you know, if that's the case, it's partly good news, but I think it's really largely a punt. And I think they could have done a lot more. They could have been a lot more forceful, certainly without any political ramifications to this decision. For them, at least, they're not elected officials or anything. I thought they could have been a lot more forceful, but we'll see what the report actually says.
Well, the whole thing is problematic. Even if you put the best face on the intentions of Baker and Hamilton and their respective members, this was something the president never wanted, another study group or report that he didn't want. And he has now said that he's open to their ideas, and in the same breath, he always shoots down many of the possibilities likely to be suggested by the Baker Group or anybody else.
Well, he kneecapped him right out of the box. I mean, the New York Times said this morning that that the Iraq Study Group was going to propose a drawdown that begins next year, and he comes out in his press conference this morning, President Bush does, and says there will be no graceful exit from Iraq. And so he said, despite the rumors that you're hearing in Washington, D.C., it was a direct shot at the Iraq Study Group that they're going to come back and tell you, the American people, that they want a drawdown, but you'll hear from me first, the commander-in-chief, that there will be no drawdown. We're staying here until the end of my presidency, as he said before. So, he's totally dismissed them, and of course the White House and the Pentagon are doing their own internal reviews, which will certainly suggest what the president wants, which is that we got to stay the course, because if we leave, chaos will erupt as if it's not already there.
Yeah. And this just seems so sad that there he is, you know, close to the belly of the beast. Certainly, the King of Jordan had to try to share a little reality with him in their dinner that Maliki boycotted on Wednesday night. Not a snub. No. Just didn't feel hungry. And, you know, he continues to dig those Texas boots deeper and deeper into the mud.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm not sure what to make of this leaked memo from Stephen Hadley. I think that largely it was a doing of somebody in the administration to intentionally put this out there, because it looks like the White House is being tough on Maliki. I think that was the message that the White House wanted to send, is that Maliki is really the one who's screwing this all up, and we're trying to be tough on him. So my sense was that it was not an unintentional leak, but rather an intentional one.
Well, no one from the White House has demanded that Patrick Fitzgerald look into it, have they?
That's exactly right. And today on CNN, Wolf Blitzer asked Alberto Gonzalez, the Attorney General, directly about this and said, are you going to investigate this leak? And he said, no, we have no plans to.
No, because it was an authorized leak.
That's right. This was a good leak for them.
Well, and to that point, the Hadley memo, it does appear that that's what offended Maliki, and it's why he didn't show up for the dinner Wednesday night. But I did not get to see the joint news conference today, so perhaps you can tell our listeners what went on. From accounts I've read, the president continued to talk about some sort of victory, or at least achieving a mission, and Maliki seemed to be parroting some of the same talking points.
Yeah, they clearly are talking off the same sheet about the need to stay in Iraq. That's one of the major things that they really communicated in their press conferences, that they're working on training up the Iraqi forces. They're working on all these different reconstruction projects, which we've heard all before. There was no real breaking news except what I mentioned earlier, which was the kneecapping of the Iraq Study Group saying that, quote, there will be no graceful exit from Iraq. I just like the insertion of graceful there, because I think the president just doesn't want to entertain any type of exit, whether it's graceful or ungraceful. He just doesn't want to talk about it.
Well,
that was the headline coming out.
That kind of a denial, first of all, it's great fodder for John Stewart, and I will stay up late tonight to see what he does with it. But it just kind of underscores that this guy is stubborn and arrogant and really doesn't have the ability to provide nuanced reactions or responses. He's got to take this hard black and white position, and it's increasingly biting him in his own butt.
Well, I tell you, one of the things that I wish that some people on the left could do a little bit better is talk about what the scenario would be if we actually did withdraw. What would happen if we pulled back a few troops? I think too many people think it would just be a disaster, that it would be more civil war, we'd leave a country in chaos. But if you look at some of the polls that are coming out of Iraqis, and worldpublicopinion.org has done some polls of Iraqis, and people can go there and check it out, but 6 in 10 Iraqis say that the situation on the ground would actually get better if U.S. troops left. And that's a concept that here in the United States just doesn't fly. But yet in Iraq, 60% of them think the situation will get better. So I think we could do a better job of explaining the fact that a withdrawal might actually be in Iraqi's best interest, and we could see perhaps a stable Iraq develop, but only if we took the American face off the occupation.
Let's take a break, and we'll talk more about this. I want to drill in a little further on the Hadley memo and some of the recommendations it made for how they can prop up Maliki, and we'll talk about some other issues related to Iraq, too. Baz Shakir is with us from the Center for American Progress, co-editor of their Daily Progress Report. Today's issue, oh, it's about Iraq. Aren't you surprised? If you have a comment or question, join us now at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
It is useless to resist us.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 20 minutes past the hour. And we continue with Faiz Shakir. By the way, he spells his name F-A-I-Z. Some people email and have a lot of fun with your name, Faiz.
I'd like to see what they send.
Well, you get two Z's sometimes.
Oh, okay. You know? Like jazz. That's how you pronounce it.
Faiz, as we mentioned, co-editor of the Daily Progress Report at the Center for American Progress in Washington. Coming back to the Hadley memo, and I was feverishly during the commercials there trying to find my copy of yesterday's New York Times section on it, and I can't. But when I read it yesterday, it was interesting because first there was the critique of Maliki that he doesn't appear to be sincere or serious about really bringing the Sadr faction under control and some of the other armed militia groups. And they question really whether he was in touch with reality. And I read a portion of it yesterday, Faiz, and kind of changed the names and the locations a little bit. And it sounded just like our president.
That's exactly right. I'll read you a part of it. And he says, Stephen Hadley in this leaked memo, says, the reality on the streets of Baghdad suggests Maliki is either ignorant of what is going on, misrepresenting his intentions, or that his capabilities are not yet sufficient to turn his good intentions into action.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right. And at one point he says of Maliki that he is not getting enough counsel from outside of his closest advisors, trapped within his inner circle. And, of course, when we read that, we thought it was coming from the Department of Irony because that's, of course, the common criticism of President Bush that he can't look beyond his inner circle for advice as well.
Mm-hmm. And then toward the end of the memo, there were these kind of positive steps that the U.S. could take to prop up the Maliki government. And some of these just seemed really bizarre.
There were a lot of like micro loans that we can do. We can rebuild this school here and there, and it was a lot of marginal, I would say, marginal recommendations of what they can do on the edges to make things better. But I would say that the structure, as you've outlaid it, is another reason why I don't think that it was an unintentional leak, but rather an intentional leak. Because if you read this, it will look like Hadley was basically writing an op-ed, you know, to be published somewhere, and he talked about what the diagnosis was on the ground, what are some of the problems, and he listed them out, and then he said, what are our solutions, and he listed those out. So really, it was just a good advertisement for the administration.
Mm-hmm. Now, Faiz, later today, we have a guest on the program, Raed Harar, or Jarar, from Global Exchange, and he's going to raise some questions about the legality of the occupation itself. And the United Nations this week, in a surprise and rather quick move, renewed the occupation authority given to the so-called coalition that we all know is driven by the United States. And the questions that come up really are twofold for me. One is, did Maliki have the authority to accept this extension? There are members of the Iraqi parliament who thought they were going to be consulted on this. And does the United States still have a legal basis to keep troops in Iraq? After all, you don't have to take my word or answer my questions about it. It's Senator John Warner who has raised the issue that now that it's a civil war, this doesn't match the authorization for use of military force that was passed in October of 2002.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He said that just a few months ago, Senator John Warner did. And when he said it, he said, hypothetically, if we enter a civil war, then we'd have to reassess whether we need another congressional authorization to remain there and whether we actually want to keep troops there and what our purpose is, whose side do we take, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's one of the reasons, and a lot of media isn't talking about this, I think that's one of the reasons why President Bush doesn't want to come out and explicitly state that it is a civil war, because on the one hand, you could see why he'd want to do it. He'd say, well, the situation is so dire that we do need to stay. But the second he did it, I think you'd see Congress jump to action and say, well, that now allows us to take charge. And, of course, John Warner will no longer be the chairman. It'll be Carl Levin who will be the chairman. And I'm sure that he agrees largely with what Warner said. So, yeah, that's definitely right.
Now, what about on the Iraqi side? Did Maliki engineer this without proper approval?
You know, I think I don't know enough about it. I think I have to leave it to your guest. He seems like much more of an expert, but we know that Maliki is a puppet master, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's clearly the one. He doesn't make decisions by himself. We know that the operations in Baghdad, for instance, a lot of them that are going on are just being dictated to Maliki by the coalition authority. They're just saying, we're going to go in here and raid this place and bomb that place, and we've never heard Maliki authorize any of these. You know, the other day, another big announcement came out was that President Bush is authorizing another few thousand troops to go into Baghdad, so another surge of troop levels in Baghdad. Did Maliki okay this? No, of course not.
Mm-hmm. What do you hear, anything further on the ABC News report about 48 hours ago that the U.S. is prepared to toss it in and give up on Anbar province, transfer about 30,000 U.S. troops to try to control Baghdad?
Right. This Anbar province has been an issue for like over a year, ever since the administration decided to do its Baghdad strategy, which was to just focus on securing Baghdad. They had to find troops from somewhere, and so they tried to pull them in from all around the country, including Anbar, and when that happened, Anbar just went to hell. And so now the Marines have been saying for a long time that we no longer have any control there, and I think to explain the concept of a civil war, I think, is too simple. I think to understand what is actually going on in Iraq, I think there are four different conflicts going on. One is this Baghdad struggle. Another one is the Shia on Shia violence in the south. This is Muqtada al-Sadr's people versus all the other clans. Then you have the Anbar province in the west. That's a third. And then you have the Kurds fighting Arabs in the north. So, I mean, there's a whole range of chaos going on there.
Yeah, that's very well put. And I'm glad you described it that way, because the president still seems to think it's all al-Qaeda's fault, and it's these terrorists that just won't let go of him. One more point here, Faz, before I permit you to make a graceful exit. Democratic leaders seek special Iraq envoy. Jack Reed, the senator from Rhode Island, yesterday made a proposal that Bush name a special envoy. Now, first of all, I commend the Democrats for coming up with an interesting proposal here that wouldn't necessarily poke the president in the eye, but might help move things forward. What do you make of this?
I'm a little skeptical. I think that it's a good proposal, like you said. I think it's a good move for the Democrats to try to find somebody that they can work with within the administration, you know, and say, okay, well, here's the official envoy, and if we can't work with Bush, let's work with this guy. But as we know, the special envoys have a history of not being able to accomplish much, because it's about the president's authority ultimately, and if the president's not invested in it, then the special envoy can't do anything that the president won't allow him to.
Yeah, that's a good point. I just think the Democrats are trying to look active at a point where they haven't yet taken power. And I hear from restless progressives every day who think that the Democrats should have fixed everything by now. So I think it's an interesting step to take here during this lame duck period.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
All right, Faz. Well, thank you for joining us today. We'll talk to you again next week.
Okay, thanks, Peter.
Time for your graceful exit. There he goes. Faz Shakir, gracefully. Oh, a pirouette. Oh, a double axel. Oh, my God. Coming up next, Bo Grosskopf, a professor of international relations at CSU Chico, will join us right here on the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Matt Renner. Visit our website, peterbcollins.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Monterey Peninsula College Holiday Jewelry Sale is here, starting Tuesday, December 5th through the 7th. It's your chance to buy gorgeous, one-of-a-kind silver and metal jewelry pieces, plus fabulous metal art, also handmade ceramics, over 20 of our most talented artists, with affordable, delicious jewelry. This sale is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, December 5th, 6th, and 7th. Open all day till 7 p.m. at Monterey Peninsula College, 980 Fremont in Monterey. Follow the signs for parking. Don't miss it.
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is hands down the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Palacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
This is Laura Pruneda of Pruneda Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Pruneda Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Pruneda Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Pruneda of Pruneda Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to prunedarealestate.com.
Don't your children deserve the very best for the holidays? Locally owned and operated for 36 years, Thinker Toys has been the first holiday shopping stop for generations of parents in Carmel and Monterey, where owner Mark Phillips and his staff take great pride in personally serving every customer. Thinker Toys is dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly. While Thinker Toys specializes in educational toys for newborns through six-year-olds, there's no better place than Thinker Toys to buy great toys for thinking kids of all ages. Make your child's Christmas, Hanukkah, Christmaka, Kwanzaa, or the holiday of your choice extra special with high-quality educational toys and games from Thinker Toys. Open every day at 10 a.m. in Carmel at 7th and San Carlos and in Monterey at the Del Monte Center. Drop by Thinker Toys today and tell Mark that Peter B. sent you. Happy holidays from Thinker Toys.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
The Monterey Bay Chapter of the United Nations Association invites you to the annual Human Rights Day Luncheon, Saturday, December 2nd at noon at the Elks Lodge in Monterey. This event will honor Paul Klein, longtime volunteer leader of the Interfaith Homeless Emergency Lodging Program. And yours truly, Peter B. Collins, will deliver a talk. Are human rights being redefined in a tortured way? The public is invited. Log on to unamontereybay.org for more information or call 831-375-8301. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, up and down the left coast and oozing eastward, now live in Phoenix, Arizona on KPHX 1480. Wherever you are, I'm glad you're listening. America. America lost another top gun in Iraq. The pilot of an Air Force F-16 CG fighter crashed outside Baghdad recently. And the story has been a little murky because Al Jazeera reported that they had a photograph of the dead pilot that was so grisly they didn't want to show it. And Al Jazeera has not exercised that kind of tastefulness in the past. Yet the U.S. authorities report that they don't have a trace of the pilot, and they're searching for him. We get more on this story from the author of a new book that I haven't seen yet, Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. It's written by Bo Groskopf, who is professor of international relations at CSU, the California State University in Chico. Professor, nice to talk to you here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Nice to talk to you, Peter.
How's it going?
Going well.
You're raising some very interesting questions, not just about this particular crash or shoot down. The details are still, as I said, a little murky. But about the use of air power in general in occupied Iraq. Tell us a little more about your thinking.
Well, the reason for me that this story is important is that it breaks the silence that has enveloped media coverage and administration pronouncements about the continuing use of air power. From the very beginning, we know that air power was the weapon of choice. That's what was called the strategy of shock and awe. And shock and awe theory is just a reformulation of what's called strategic bombing theory, which holds that if you bomb civilian populations, since you're bombing basically women and children, they don't have the will to resist, and they will eventually force the government to resign. What we saw Israel doing in Lebanon this summer is nothing more than shock and awe.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, all of this has been either not covered, made invisible by media coverage and Pentagon pronouncements and administration pronouncements, or shock and awe has become a phrase of jocularity. But strategic bombing, use of air power, is very serious business. It's very dirty business for people on the ground.
Well, and while we like to talk about precision bombing, laser-guided aerial weapons, the sorry truth is that it's not a precise process. There's a lot of collateral damage. And in an occupation, it seems to be, the weapon of last resort. Yet we seem to be using it as something more than that.
Well, we're using it as a weapon of first resort, primarily, as you say, because it's presented as clean war. Well, as I said, it's very clean to the people who are bombing from 30,000, 15,000 feet. It's very dirty, as we saw in Lebanon, to the people on the ground. Of course, we haven't been allowed to see that in the Iraqi or Afghan case, even though studies have demonstrated that the bombing of, for example, Afghanistan, the first 10 weeks of that campaign caused more deaths, about twice as many deaths, civilian deaths, as happened on 9/11. And the study that came out in 2004 by the John Hopkins Group shows that 110,000 civilians had died by that time, 79% of them through the bombing. So it's dirty business. The fact is that the proponents of air power try to have it both ways. As you say, they present the idea that it is precision bombing, though they never define precision for us, and that they are trying through their bombing to minimize civilian casualties. Again, they never define what they mean by minimal.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we find that time and time again, civilian targets are bombed. The rationale for that, the explanation for that is, oh, there are mistakes made. Well, if there are mistakes made or if it's not accurate, then how can you talk about precision? And secondly, if it is precise, and you're bombing, as in the case of Fallujah, for example, or in the case of bombing Baghdad initially, you're bombing suburban neighborhoods, you're bombing shopping malls, you're bombing health facilities and hospitals, then if it is so precise, then obviously you're purposely bombing those with precision weaponry. That's what we call terrorism.
Professor, I want to refer here to a news article from the New York Times, Friday, November 17th, so about 2 weeks ago. And I'll get to the data here in just a moment. that I think is fascinating, but one of the points they make echoes what you just said. In Afghanistan, the increased use of air power has also come at a cost in casualties among Allied forces and civilians. In September, an American A-10 attack on attack jet mistakenly opened fire on Canadian troops southwest of Kandahar, killing one and wounding dozens more. Now, that is a lift from a story whose main focus is the sharp increase in the use of air power in Afghanistan in 2006. For example, in October, there were more than 400 air sorties over Afghanistan. In September, it was over 700, between 475 and 500 in August. And July was in the range of 275. Now, if this graph can be believed, the actual number of air sorties in Iraq is far lower. In each of those months I just cited where it was in the hundreds in Afghanistan, it was below 100 in Iraq. Is this a credible report?
Yes, it's probably credible. We do know that because there are not, quote, boots on the ground, as many boots on the ground in Afghanistan, and the resurgence of the Taliban is widespread over a large geographical area, that air power is conceded to be the way that you can conduct either bombing runs to get targets themselves or support whatever troops are there. And increasingly, air power, because it, again, doesn't put the pilots in that much jeopardy. I mean, we allegedly won the war over Afghanistan, and all of a sudden you require a lot more troops, and then you require out of troops comes casualties. Obviously, that's a politically inconvenient thing for an administration who's not only trying to say things were improving in Iraq, but in fact the war was won in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Professor, any indication that we're using cluster bombs in either Iraq or Afghanistan? We know that Israel has been accused of using them in its assault on Lebanon and Hezbollah this past summer.
That's been well documented in both cases. In fact, Iraq is still trying to recover from the use of cluster bombs in the Persian Gulf crisis, Persian Gulf War I.
And are we still using cluster bombs, do you know?
Yes, we are.
Mm-hmm. And what about the use of white phosphorus as an illuminator for air raids? Is that still active?
Well, I don't know whether it's active or not. Of course, they got caught by using it in Fallujah, and they first denied that they were using it, and then, of course, then they try to say that, as you reported, that they are trying to use it not as a weapon of war, but as an illuminator. But eyewitness accounts, health report accounts from the Iraqi Health Ministry and other people, including this John Hopkins group, documented that indeed people were suffering from symptoms that very much were akin to the use of white phosphorus.
Well, and our own troops described a technique called shake and bake.
Yes.
Where they used white phosphorus not simply to light up the sky and identify a battle scene, but as a weapon, as a chemical weapon, a WMD, if you will.
Yeah, the fact that the Pentagon has used as a defense of using the weapon that it's not a violation of the Geneva Conventions tells us that they've had to move from, you know, absolute denial that anything was being used to a defense that says, oh, well, we're using it, but it doesn't violate the Geneva Conventions.
Mm-hmm. Professor Grosskopf, I'm very concerned about the use of depleted uranium munitions in Iraq and the legacy that will create. Do you have any indication that we have dialed back from the use of DU munitions?
I don't know specifically, but my guess would be that we have not. The Pentagon, of course, still refuses to say there's any link between the Gulf War syndrome and the use of DU, despite European admonitions that there is a strong connection, or evidence that there is a strong connection, to the point where the Italians absolutely are horrified by such a connection. But we know that U.S. soldiers, personnel, are coming back already with the same kind of symptoms that were exhibited in the Persian Gulf One, which lots of researchers say is accounted for by the use of DU weaponry. It is a weapon of choice, according to the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
Because their assumption is that it doesn't have the kind of effects that the scientists or the researchers claim it does.
That's shocking, because Anthony LaPay of the Guerrilla News Network shot a video in Iraq 2 years ago, and they went around with Geiger counters and examined the background radiation levels in abandoned American vehicles, tanks, weaponry, and in certain sites. And they found, in some cases, levels of radiation at 900% of what humans can tolerate.
Well, of course, you have to remember, Peter, that in Vietnam, for example, the Pentagon has its own scientists. And so in terms of the disasters known as the Rainbow Agents, with the most famous one being Agent Orange, they claim for a long time that they're scientists, said there was no danger to human life in terms of these agents. And the same thing is going on here. You know, obviously the Pentagon has a real financial stake, as well as I guess one would call it political stake or patriot stake, in making sure that people going over there don't think they're being put in harm's way by their own people.
Mm-hmm.
And financially, you know, the number of suits and the number of medical, you know, the amount of medical expenses that if indeed they admitted to a link would be horrendous in terms of their budget.
Yeah. Professor, to the extent you can, I'd like to try to sort through the facts of this F-16 incident. I have a story attributed to the Washington Post that was published in the San Francisco Chronicle today that reads, U.S. officials said Wednesday they are trying to determine if human remains found at the crash site of this F-16 20 miles northwest of Baghdad are those of the plane's pilot, who has been identified as Major Troy Gilbert, who had been deployed from Luke Air Force Base in Arizona. But the military has provided no other details. The plane crashed in Anbar province this past Monday as he flew low to the ground in support of ground troops fighting insurgents. It says it took hours for U.S. troops to arrive at the crash site, and by the time they did, Gilbert was gone. Now, the article here does cite television networks reported that they had video footage of the dead pilot. I think they're referring, without naming it, to Al Jazeera. And as I understand, Al Jazeera declined to show the footage because it was too grisly. How can the U.S. be searching for the pilot when Al Jazeera has a photograph of him in, you know, a lifeless mode?
Well, obviously, the answer is, Peter, from my perspective, is that, as we know, the administration is trying now with the English language, Al Jazeera, trying to demonstrate that this network is absolutely biased, has no credibility in terms of their level of investigation and professionalism, and therefore this makes a lot of sense in that regard.
Well, I imagine the truth will come out ultimately. The other inconsistency is that Al Jazeera said the photographs they had showed that a parachute had at least been partially deployed, and the U.S. says that it appeared that the pilot had not ejected from the plane. So it's curious. I'll just offer this, and maybe you happen to see it. This goes back to 2004 during the first assault on Fallujah, when the U.S. was being accused of using airstrikes and claimed that it was not. And this was live on CNN. Aaron Brown was still the anchor before he got deposed by Anderson Cooper. And Aaron Brown was interviewing an American general in Qatar who flatly declared that the U.S. was not bombing in Fallujah. And then they added the pictures in the background live from Al Jazeera that showed bombing raids underway in Fallujah at that moment. The general then denied again that it was going on, and Aaron Brown said, thank you very much. We'll take a break.
Well, again, you know, Peter, for me, I can explain that in terms of the, you know, maintaining the invisibility of the air war, because anybody who examines or investigates the air war and the results of the air war, the devastation caused by the air war, cannot dismiss that devastation to civilian life. And, of course, that simply forces people to the conclusion that in fighting the war on terrorism, we're fighting a war of terrorism. And, of course, nobody wants to go there. That's the most politically incorrect thing one can do, which is to say that your nation doesn't have the moral side in the victory, the moral
level in terms of the war on terrorism.
Bo Groskopf is with us, professor of international relations at California State University, Chico, and also the author of a new book, Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. If you got a question or comment, call us now, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Politicians may come and go, but for the past 33 years, Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey. Technically proficient, Dr. Turner specializes in listening to every patient's concerns and feelings. And because Dr. Turner cares about you, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112, 831-375-1112, 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner, 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Listen to broadcast journalist Glenn Brooks as he is joined by health crusader Lisa LaRose and Western Feng Shui master Ann Christie for One Wisdom, a program designed to bring you conversations that invoke your creativity, playfulness, and well-being. Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 8 minutes away from the hour, as we continue our conversation with Professor Bo Groskopf from California State University, Chico. Here's a politically infused tune from Michael Franti and Spearhead. It's called Yell Fire.
A revolution never comes with a warning. A revolution never sends you an omen. A revolution just arrived like the morning. Bring the alarm, we come to wake up the snoring. They're telling you to never worry about the future. They're telling you to never worry about the torture. They're telling you that you will never see the horror. Spend it all today and we will bill you tomorrow. Three pieces and bank accounts in Bahamas. Wall Street crime will never send you to the slammer. Tell all the children in the arms of the mamas. The F-15 is a homicide bomber. TV commercial for a Papa Pill Coach.
The line there reads, the F-15 is a homicide bomber.
G.I. Joe father, 10 years from now, is anybody gonna bother you? Fire.
As I mentioned, Professor Grosskopf has a new book out called Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. Where can we find that? Is it out now?
It is out now. It came out in September. Yes, it's fresh on the shelves.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk with you, and if you can have your people get to my people and get us a copy of the book, I'll be happy to take a look at it and invite you back to talk about what I learned from it.
I'll be delighted to do that.
Excellent. Give us a quick thesis of the book.
Well, it has two things I try to do in the book. One is to encourage people to understand that this euphemism of shock and awe is very deadly business, and that it is simply a reformulation, as I said earlier, of a strategy that asks the question, can air power win war? And the answer by the strategic bombing enthusiasts is yes, basically by bombing civilians, understanding that civilians are women and children, and they simply don't have the will to resist as the warrior class does, so they will quickly lose that will to resist and force the government to sue for peace. This is a theory that was developed after World War I with the confluence of the disappointment about and frustration about trench warfare as defensive and feminized war, and something manly men don't fight, and then, of course, the advent of the age of aviation. So, for example, Billy Mitchell, our godfather of our Air Force, is one of the what they call the four prophets that put together this theory. The other is to talk about how the bombing nations, as I call them, have been able to successfully rationalize, set up a whole rationalization scheme by which they can rationalize their bombing of civilians and civilian targets as not terrorism, and have convinced many, many people, particularly in our own country, that, as you noted before, that, it's clean, it's precise.
Yeah, we've sanitized it to the level of a video game.
Absolutely. And even our language, by the way, I heard you use the concept collateral damage, which everybody sort of accepts, which, mm-hmm. of course, what does that do? It simply objectifies the victims on the ground. Oh, they're just collateral damage.
Right.
By the way, the new terminology, as I talk about in my book, is not collateral damage. It's regrettable byproducts of the war on terrorism.
Oh, my.
And
do they have a euphemist, an actual euphemist in the White House?
Absolutely. But, absolutely. What this does is objectify, and so it doesn't really matter because, there's all kinds of racism and sexism that goes along with this rationalization scheme. And, can you imagine, Peter, if anybody suggested or used the term collateral damage, let alone attributed regrettable byproducts of the war on terror about the 9/11 victims or Israeli victims and Hezbollah bombing? Could you imagine the outrage about that in the Western community?
Oh, I can hear it.
We do it on a daily basis in this society, and the media just absolutely loves this terminology.
Let's take a call. John in Carmel Valley, join us. Peter B. and Professor Grosskopf.
I want to thank you, Peter, for having this guest from Chico State. I think you've both heard over and over that expression, Iraqis aren't counted because Iraqis don't count. They don't, not because I think they don't, but and I know the listeners wouldn't feel that way either, most of them, but we're conducting a war on that basis. Tom Hartman this morning, he has said this before, but he said it especially ably this morning. He said, these are people, and he meant the Iraqis, who want to live, who don't want to die any more than we do, and yet, by our actions there, whether we intend it or not, we're killing them in unthinkable numbers, or they're just getting caught up in one thing or another in this terrible conflict. And he was using this, and I now have arrived at this myself. He said, essentially he was saying, this president needs to be impeached for this problem alone, let alone countless other reasons.
Professor, give us a quick reaction. We've got about 30 seconds before the break.
Well, I think your caller is absolutely right, and I'm glad that he's bothered by these statistics and by these actions, because what he's doing is he's trying to break through this
this rationalization scheme, this Lebensraum rationalizations, and beginning to understand that, you know, whether legally, you know, whether legally you can make a case, some people think you can. In fact, there's a new book out, I hear, that's trying to make this legal case against impeaching President Bush.
Right, that's Elizabeth de la Vega.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Not in terms of impeaching him, but in terms of bringing him before the criminal court.
Right. Or at least building a case there.
Building a case.
Professor, I'm sorry we're out of time, but I do look forward to talking to you in the future. We'll get a copy of your book and have you back on the program.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a delight.
Professor Bo Groskopf from California State University, Chico. Coming up next, Mother Jones, Iraq Time.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right. Dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Iraq Study Group preaches tough love.
Its members feel the Iraqi government has been slow to enact badly needed reforms.
In the land of the free, more of us than ever are in prison. I'm Dan Ravive.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Weeks rather than months, months rather than years. After the meeting in Amman, officials in Washington and Baghdad think they can move things along in Iraq. White House National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley says there's a real sense of urgency, and President Bush will start to make policy changes within weeks. And Prime Minister Maliki says Iraq's forces will be ready to take over security duties in a matter of months, by June of next year. That would fit nicely with the plan advocated by the Baker-Hamilton panel. CBS News correspondent David Martin has new information.
The Iraq Study Group will recommend that all 15 American combat brigades, that's about 75,000 troops, should be pulled out of action and either back into base camps or entirely out of the country within 16 months. A source close to the study group tells CBS News. During that time, the mission of U.S. soldiers and Marines currently patrolling the streets would change to that of trainers and advisors embedded with Iraqi soldiers and police. Our goal is a change in the primary mission from combat to support, this source said. This must happen, he added, even if the Iraqis don't make the changes we want them to. We have to let these people know they have to get their act together, or we are getting out of there.
But the president insists he'll do nothing precipitous.
Agreeing to transfer to the Iraqi prime minister more command and control authority over his nation's troops, President Bush dismissed notions that he's gearing up for a quick withdrawal of American forces.
And that's why this business about graceful exit just simply has no realism to it at all. We're going to help this government.
And putting aside the criticism of al-Maliki and that leaked White House memo yesterday, Mr. Bush called the prime minister a strong leader, courageous, and, quoting now, the right guy for Iraq. Mark Noller, CBS News, Amman, Jordan.
Now this.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all.
Nothing says it's the holidays quite like TomTom portable navigation devices singing your favorite holiday songs. And now through December 3rd, if you buy any TomTom, you get $50 off.
$50 off.
It's the TomTom Give event. You give a TomTom, we give you $50 off any model at any retailer. So give the best portable everyday GPS solution, TomTom. Heck, give one to yourself. Find your way the easy way.
$50 off.
'Twas the days around Christmas, when all through the land, motorists were rejoicing. Happy Honda Days was at hand. The vehicles were displayed in the showroom with care. The Civic, the Accord, the Element, even the all-new CR-V was there. Away to the Accord, I flew like a flash. Spotting the price tag, I knew they would slash. My dealer exclaimed as I drove out of sight, Happy Honda Days to all, and to all a good night.
Celebrate the great deals at your Honda dealer today.
It might be nothing, but the Department of Homeland Security has given the U.S. financial industry a warning that Al-Qaeda might be plotting to penetrate and destroy the databases of stock market and bank websites. The warning's prompted by a posting on an Arabic website. What sounds like a motor running is sleet hitting the ground in North Texas. The nation's midsection is being clobbered by the first big winter storm of the season. Parts of Oklahoma under a blizzard warning, with snow and ice stretching all the way to Michigan and Ohio. Roads are slick and air travelers are seriously delayed. Chuck Schechner of station KRLD went to Dallas-Fort Worth Airport.
250 flights are canceled. Odie Boyd left 4 inches of snow behind in Amarillo, only to be delayed at DFW.
Canceled 2 flights so far, and we'll see. He says, and it may get canceled again.
Shola Howell is trying to get to the East Coast with little success.
I was supposed to travel to Newark, New Jersey at 12:30, so we're stuck here till whenever.
Passengers glance up at departure monitors, hoping that yellow word canceled does not pop up next to their flight. Chuck Schechner, CBS News, DFW Airport.
You might be surprised to hear how many of us are or have been behind bars. CBS News correspondent Dan Revive looks at some new statistics.
A Justice Department report reveals a record number of Americans are in prison, on probation, or on parole, a total of 7 million. That's one out of every 32 adults. Fewer than one-third of them are now in prison or jail, but that's 2.2 million people, up almost 2% last year. The overall growth in America's population is just 1%. So why are more people than ever locked up? Some criminal justice experts say, in general, judges and sentences have become less lenient. Dan Revive, CBS News, Washington.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Well, we're here with CompUSA computer expert Meg Pixel.
Hiya, Bob.
Meg, I'm getting my brother Stu a notebook computer this holiday.
Oh, he's also going to need software, a bag, an optical mouse.
Wait. I don't like Stu that much.
Oh, relax, Bob. At CompUSA, you can get complete gift packs.
Uh-huh.
You start with your main item, like a Sony Vaio C140 notebook, now with $150 instant savings, and then save 10% on qualifying accessories when you buy 3 or more.
So I can get everything Stu needs?
Exactly. There are lots of complete gift packs to choose. See your local CompUSA for details.
What a guy I am. He usually gets me a bun warmer.
Have you read or seen the latest? There's more good news for those with arthritis and joint or back pain. Results from a recent study report that a group of orthopedic doctors rated Aleve as the number one most effective over-the-counter brand when it comes to relief of minor arthritis pain. That's right. Aleve was rated number one for pain relief by orthopedic doctors. Ask your doctor about the good news. Ask your doctor about Aleve. Use as directed. Survey of 260 orthopedic surgeons conducted April 2006.
You can learn.
Oh, gosh. I was having so much fun with my machine here. If it's possible to laugh about a war, Roy Zimmerman is the enabler. That's his tune, called The War on Terror. And we're focusing on the situation in Iraq today. We started off our program with Faz Shakir talking about the meeting in Jordan with Bush and Maliki. And Professor Grosskopf was talking with us about the use of air power in Iraq. Coming up later this hour, we're going to talk with a fellow from Global Exchange who runs their Iraq project, Raed Jarar, and he's going to raise some interesting questions about the legality of the extension of the occupation authorization by the United Nations this week. Joining us this half hour is Jonathan Steiner, who works at Mother Jones Magazine and has been part of the team that has been feverishly working, and he'll tell us how long, to compile an excellent interactive timeline database that you can access at motherjones.com. Jonathan, welcome to our program today.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Great. Nice to talk with you. How long did you and your team work to build this baby?
Well, we've probably been on work on this thing since January or February of this year. It was an idea for a issue of the magazine early in the year. It kept getting pushed back, and as a result, it kept growing and growing and growing until it became this mammoth thing that we decided we would have to show in its full glory online, because no magazine on this earth could possibly hold it. And it has been a group effort by basically everyone here at Mother Jones.
Have any idea how many terabytes or how many different entries you've compiled here?
Hundreds. When this is done, and there's portions of this thing that have not yet seen daylight, I would suspect be over 1,000.
Wow. And what was the purpose, the editorial purpose? What did you want to make available to us, the end user?
We wanted this to be a resource for journalists, for researchers, and for private citizens, not only in the present day, but into the future. We wanted this to be something that people could look to if they wanted to look up a particular fact, or they wanted to see one particular subplot of this 5 or 6 year period that we're looking at here. It's not supposed to be just something that disproves the case for war. It's not supposed to be something that indicts President Bush before the 2006 or 2008 elections. It's supposed to be something that people can go to for years and years for ammunition and arguments, for writing papers, for doing good journalism.
Mm-hmm. And the title, at least the original title, was not subtle. Lie by Lie, the Mother Jones Iraq War Timeline. Now, I'm not the least bit offended by the term lie, but it's still something that some people are sensitive about. They think the president just got phony intelligence, just was too eager to go to war. But that's really just spin.
It is, and here's why. If you look at the major intelligence streams, if you look at the – and by that I mean if you look at the major facts, subplots, these sorts of things that the Bush administration used to make the case to war, every single one of them was disproved very, very early in the process. And you could make the argument that perhaps President Bush is so naive and so disconnected from his advisors that he was not aware that the intelligence of this character named Curveball wasn't reliable. But to argue that George W. Bush didn't know that every single aspect of his case for war was seriously doubted by his own intelligence agencies or the intelligence agencies of other countries or by the UN is preposterous. And in the end, we're not here to highlight individual lies, though we do that, but to provide a chronicle of a 5, let's say 6 year period in which we were took to war as a country under false pretenses and with disastrous results.
Yeah. Well, and this may not have been your intention, but as I look at this and I see the work of people like John Nichols of The Nation, who's written a book about impeachment, Elizabeth de la Vega, who's mm-hmm. just published a book that is essentially the legal case for impeachment or other accountability processes that could be applied to this president and this administration. What you have here is an interactive database that could help either members of the average public or perhaps people who are charged with investigating or prosecuting these official misdeeds. This is going to be a very valuable way. For example, those who are fighting for the truth about 9/11 have found one of the greatest resources is the timeline. Michael Rupert, I think, is the guy who put it together.
Mm-hmm.
But it helps identify the various accounts linked to the exact time that events occurred, and you can see discrepancies that surface there, even without buying into even a single conspiracy theory.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I should point out that everything here in the timeline is rigorously sourced. These aren't just the ramblings of, you know, a hyper-liberal organization as we're from time to time branded. Everything in the web timeline has hot links, sometimes multiple hot links. And if you click on them, you can see that we source everything that is written in the timeline to books written by America's top journalists and news accounts written by America's top journalists, at other times reports, internal military reports, and all sorts of very, very reliable sources.
Jonathan, do you offer tech support?
Absolutely,
Well,
Peter.
Good. I'd like you to walk us through this. And first, if you're driving, don't attempt this. But we have listeners who have access to handheld devices like a BlackBerry or a Trio. We have listeners who are at work or otherwise in front of a computer screen. So if you'd like to follow along with us, go to motherjones.com. And on the homepage, there is a box on the left that says Iraq War Timeline, Lie by Lie. You click on that, and it does take a minute or two to load because this is a massive database. And what you then end up with is a screen that I'm looking at right now. And we have selected November of 2002 as a point where we're just going to dive into the timeline, and Jonathan's going to tell us how to operate and you know, delve into the data that's been collected here. So, Jonathan, before we went on the air, while I was fiddling with the music there and late for the cue, we decided that we're going to talk about Al-Libi, and this isn't Scooter Libby. This is Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, a senior al-Qaeda official in charge of the network's training camps in Afghanistan. And he was captured in Pakistan in November of 2002, correct?
It's 2001, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
Okay. Did I select the wrong year?
No, I think.
Okay, we're in the right place. We're in 2001, not 2002.
Right.
I misspoke.
Yeah, so to use our neat flash timeline here, you want to use the scroll bar on the left side to scroll up to the 2001 section, mm-hmm. then click on the rectangle for November,
right.
And then November pops up, a series of entries, all of which occurred in November of 2001. Now, mm-hmm. on November 11th, 2001, Ibn al-Sheikh al-Libi, a senior al-Qaeda official who ran training camps in Afghanistan, was captured in Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the beginning of a long saga that contributed to one of the major lies is a strong way to put it, but problematic streams of intelligence reporting that ran throughout the case for war. Now, if you go to November 2001, there's a picture of al-Libi.
It's a pretty one, too. A really nice mugshot of a guy who appears to have been beaten.
Yeah, well, when we bring in those terrorists, we don't treat them with kid gloves. So, yes, he's got some bruises, mm-hmm. and he's a bit unshaven.
Right.
But if you notice in the entry, there are icons and
right.
Little word tags here at mm-hmm. the bottom, and those are ways to sort the timeline because it's such a huge amount of information that it would
right.
be hard to scroll through all of it.
So let's click on torture here under this entry of al-Libi,
mm-hmm.
and now a new window has appeared, so I haven't lost that original one. I prefer that to, you know, having to jump in the same screen.
Yep.
And then it gives us tags here. And it talks about torture practices, John Yoo's memo in September of 2001. And then we have an item here, November 11, 2001, about al-Libi. And so I'm going to click on this, and will this tell me how he was tortured?
Well, November 11, 2001 will take you to the same entry that we just looked at. But
okay.
If you look at the one directly below it, for example, it is another al-Libi entry, but of course al-Libi was tortured. So both of these entries are tagged with torture and al-Libi, the word al-Libi. So
if you
look on early January 2002, you'll see that when al-Libi was brought into custody, there was a huge battle between the CIA and the FBI. And the FBI, who does its intelligence gathering with court practices in mind, that is to say that they realize that someday they may have to get an indictment and they have to may take what the intelligence they gather to a court of law and thus follow certain predetermined rules, whereas the CIA is under no such constraints. The CIA won that battle, which may be why Mr. al-Libi looks so beaten in the mugshot that we looked at earlier, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
He's waterboarded. He doesn't give in to lighter interrogation, so he's treated to the American Torture Special. He's waterboarded. And the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, immediately expresses concerns that maybe al-Libi is just telling his questioners what they want to hear in order to get, presumably, the waterboarding to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, that information that al-Libi gave them, specifically that Iraq supplied al-Qaeda with chemical and biological weapons training, is transported to the top decks. It's sent right up to the people in charge, top policymakers in the Pentagon and the White House. That's called stovepiping,
mm-hmm.
And it's become something of a buzzword nowadays, many thanks to Seymour Hersh, who has done the best reporting on it in The New Yorker. So that information stuck around, even though the DIA had its doubts, and later on in the process, everything al-Libi says will be retracted because al-Libi will admit that he basically lied under torture.
Mm-hmm.
The CIA will come to agree with him, and the CIA will say, you know what, none of this was reliable. We made a mistake, as is often the case with information gained under torture. And if you I can show you, Peter.
Well, let me take a break now, and we'll
sure.
return, and you can show me then. We're talking with Jonathan Steiner from Mother Jones Magazine. Log on to MotherJones.com and click on Iraq War Timeline, Lie by Lie. That's where we are. And we'll we'll continue in just a moment. We'll take your phone calls too at 888-5-PETER-B. I'm Peter B. Collins. You're listening to KRXA 540. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, meet Jim Ross, president and founder of National Real Estate Holding. Jim has been on our show the last several weeks talking about wealth building and offering great real estate investments in some of the great real estate markets of the United States. If you want to learn how to make money in a down real estate market, this is the show for you. And don't forget to be a part of the Tell a Friend Just Relax giveaway at the Legacy Villa in Palm Springs just by calling the show. That's this week on Rock Roller Real Estate, heard right here every Sunday morning at 10.
I'm tired of all these old TVs and computers trashing our garage. Can't we get rid of them once and for all?
I'd love to, honey, but it costs so much to get rid of them.
This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you can dispose of your electronic waste, TVs, monitors, old computers, and more, and it won't cost you a dime. The Electronic Waste Disposal event is happening this Friday through Sunday, December 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at the Salinas Sports Complex in Salinas. Go to noewaste.com for more information. That's noewaste.com.
Come on. On in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a killer affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery.
In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Nancy.
And we're from the Potting Shed.
In Aptos. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn, but if you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find.
The barn has a lot of charm. People tend to come there just because the atmosphere is really nice.
And they'll come and have a cup of tea, bring their dog if they have one. All the dogs who visit know exactly where the cookie jar is. So it's that kind of a place. People feel very comfortable.
When we started, we were just strictly a garden shop with pots and plants, but we had to evolve through the years because nobody needed pots and plants in the middle of winter. So we started adding things, and now it's a full-fledged gift shop.
We work very hard to try and find things that are unusual and eclectic and well-priced. That's what our customers want. We're open from 10 to 5, Wednesday through Sunday. Come by, have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
Well, just one accident to tell you about this first time around. It's in Monterey County, Prunedale North Road at Salinas Road. Two vehicles involved in this. They have been cleared over to the shoulder, and CHP is on scene taking report before they move along. Santa Cruz Mounds, Highway 17, both directions, checking in, stalling accident-free. You're going to see some slowing southbound 101 past the Red Barn and into Prunedale. Also sluggish traffic southbound Highway 1 from the Fishhook to Capitola and out of Aptos, as well as southbound Highway 1 is slow approaching Avenue in Carmel. This report is brought to you by your genuine Toyota service departments. Through December 15th, visit a participating Toyota dealer, donate a new toy valued at $10 or more, and receive Toyota's Toys for Tots service special. See a dealer for details. I'm Diane with Traffic, KRXA 540.
Not Steiner, your humble host, misspoke a few minutes ago. Jonathan Stein from Mother Jones Magazine. And we're taking a look online at this very powerful interactive database that produces a timeline of the events leading up to and since our invasion of Iraq. And, Jonathan, this is really powerful stuff. And the interactivity here just reminds me, I'm working through a book right now by Peter Lance called Triple Cross. And in it, there is a detailed timeline of the events from about 1988 forward related to Al-Qaeda, the attacks, the first attack on the World Trade Center in 93. And it's an excellent job. It forms the centerfold of his book. But it's a little disappointing because I can't click on it. And I can't drill down and say, okay, what's the source of that? Or what's the implication of a specific piece of data that's presented? So I think really this is rich, and it's very easy to navigate. I've gotten very comfortable with it very quickly here. Let's take another example here. We've arbitrarily selected April of 2003, and I'm looking at that famous posed photograph of the toppling of the Saddam statue.
That's right. The invasion of Iraq occurred in March 20th, 2003. Things go well for a little while. We are rolling around Baghdad. We're rolling around Iraq. We're not meeting a lot of resistance. Things are going well. Looks like it might be the first Gulf War all over again. And then on April 9th, we roll into Baghdad. We liberate the capital city. We pull down the statues of Saddam Hussein. And it looks like things are going to go great. And instead, it's the first indication that things are going to go south. Looting breaks out everywhere. The United States forces protect only Baghdad's airport and the oil ministry. And as you can see on the timeline here, Peter, in this section for April 9th, 2003, 17 other ministries are destroyed, 14,000 artifacts are stolen from the Iraqi National Museum, and 341 tons of high explosives are stolen from an armory that is left unguarded.
That's Al-Qaeda, and that's something that didn't surface for, at least a year?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But if you click on the hot link we have here in the timeline, it will take you to the source of that information, which happens to be a New York Times story. And so, as I said earlier before the break, everything here is sourced. Mm-hmm. If you move 2 days later on the timeline, it takes you to April 11th, 2003, which is when we liberated the city of Mosul, which repeated the pattern that had been established with Baghdad. Looting immediately breaks out. And this is one of my favorite entries in the timeline, I guess out of black humor, because it's really it's a horrible, horrible thing. When U.S. and Kurdish forces take Mosul, there's no security established anywhere. And the city, as it says here in the timeline, immediately descends into chaos. There's shootings, there's arson, there's looting. They bust open a central bank, and people are just grabbing money by the fistful in the city. People are fighting over cash. People are stealing ambulances from hospitals. People are stealing rare manuscripts and artifacts out of libraries and museums. It's just chaos. And this was the first sign that we got that the Bush administration had no plan in place to keep the peace. They had a plan to win the war. They had a plan to take Baghdad and to conquer Iraq, and nobody seemed to realize that that's not the hard part. The hard part is going into a country, a foreign country with foreign customs and foreign people, basically, and telling them, you know, here, you've never run your own government before, but we're going to help you create a civil society. That's difficult, and it was largely ignored.
And that led you to use the tag Quagmire for this particular story. Mm-hmm. And again, when we click on the Quagmire tag, we can then look at similar events that are tagged similarly. Is that right?
This is one of the richest parts of the Mother Jones timeline, and will only get richer as we add things further on down the line. But yes, everything that relates to the bumbling of the OHRA, which is the first Reconstruction Authority in Baghdad, which was soon replaced by the CPA, Jerry Bremer's CPA, and continued bumbling. No surprise.
And do your references to Paul Bremer indicate that he was on loan from Kissinger and Associates? Because that's one of the best-kept secrets in the mainstream media.
It should be in here. In fact, we can test that.
All right. You look for that, and I'm going to pull up Dave from Humboldt, who wants to join us. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Peter. Jonathan, I'm wondering if your wonderful magazine can look at the evidence that you have found yourself, lie after lie, to bring about this end. That means it's no sense blundering. That's a very willful act, trying to get us in there. So can your magazine go to the logical conclusion of the extreme criminality of this administration?
Well, I think the data are here. I think that you're trying to avoid quite jumping to that point. Am I right, Jonathan?
Yeah, we're here to provide information, basically, and what's done with it, I think, is beyond our purview, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. But you certainly don't object if people like Dave use it to prove their points.
Oh, gosh, no. Absolutely not. Nor would I object if Democrats in Congress were to use the information here to begin investigations and other such proceedings.
Yeah, Dave, thanks. Appreciate the call. And we just have a few seconds remaining here. The categories are true intel, false intel, fear factor, civil liberties eroded, expanded executive powers, torture, distraction, quagmire, profiteering and contractors, mission accomplished, and then dates that things happen and dates the public knew. Those are the categories. I want you to, next time you're online, go to MotherJones.com and dig into this. It's really, really interesting. Jonathan, thanks for joining us, and thanks for all your hard work on this.
Thank you, Peter.
Go to MotherJones.com and check it out. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Do we call it? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. So much for all the speculation. After meeting with the Iraqi Prime Minister, the President said there will be no graceful exit from Iraq, and U.S. troops will stay until the job is complete. And many of you will be tempted to say, there he goes again, denying the reality that we've gotten ourselves stuck in the crossfire of a civil war. But a civil war cannot be underway in Iraq, and the reason civil war cannot be underway in Iraq was explained yesterday by Joint Chiefs Chairman General Peter Pace.
The level of violence is specifically designed to create a civil war, so that terrorists can then set up shop and rule that those people the way they want to.
In other words, were we to call this a civil war, it would mean the enemy has achieved its goal of chaos, which is why the President says we'll push for Iraqi forces to take over, but don't expect immediate results there either because, as General Pace says, the Iraqi army is actually two armies.
If a Sunni unit somewhere else in Iraq moved into a Shia neighborhood, or a Shia unit someplace else in Iraq moved into a Sunni neighborhood, is not going to help the problem.
So the Iraqi army may not be much help in this non-civil war. So what do we call it?
It's much more important that we focus on how to defeat the enemy that is trying to create the civil war than it is dancing on the head of a pin as far as what particular words we should use to describe the environment, which is currently unacceptable.
There it is. Call it an unacceptable environment. No debate there. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging.
And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam firewalls and web filters.
Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now
and ask for your free trial. Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use.
That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
The holiday season is here again, and what perfect time to take advantage of the great selection and low prices of the finest used cars in the county. At ZNS Auto Dealership in Monterey, they have been partners for over 30 years. Located at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard, ZNS wants to be your partner in choosing that right car for you or your loved one. ZNS has it, whether it's a truck, SUV, minivan, compact, or luxury automobile. Open every day on Del Monte Boulevard, Monterey. ZNS Auto, where partnership works.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. I'm glad you're listening, however you do it, on itty-bitty speakers on your computer or that big, loud speaker in your car. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. You can call us whenever the urge strikes you, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Got to pose some interesting questions about Iraq. Joining me now is Raed Jarar. He is the Iraq Project Director for Global Exchange based in San Francisco, a great organization that you know by its founders, Medea Benjamin and Kevin Danaher. They put on the Green Festivals. They sponsor eco-tours around the world, and they help raise political consciousness on many fronts. One of the projects I know of Global Exchange is they have been running an occupation watch in Iraq and monitoring the events there. And Raed Jarar also blogs on the internet at raedinthemiddle.blogspot.com. My first opportunity to meet you, sir. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I make a point of talking to people who know more than I do. And you spent some time in Amman, Jordan, where the president has been this week. You were there in August. You've been in contact with various members of the Iraqi parliament. And one of the things I'm interested in discussing with you, Raed, is the legality of the UN's extension of the authority for the United States, so they call it a coalition, but for the United States to continue the occupation of Iraq. Tell us what the issues are here.
According to most of the Iraqi parliamentarians who I have been in contact with during the last few days, this extension is unconstitutional and illegal. What happened is that the Iraqi parliament tried to change some parts in the constitution earlier this year to make it the parliament's authority and right to renew this UN mandate when it expires at the end of the year. And they managed to actually, you know, push the government to agree on that. And after that, the Iraqi parliament have been having all of this series of the meetings and sessions for the last month, because the Iraqi parliamentarians wanted to add a number of conditions to the mandate to ensure that the United Nations mandate would not be a reason for keeping the occupation. You know, on the contrary, they wanted the UN mandate to be a reason for ending the occupation.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to put at least three conditions that they reached to after months and months of debate. And they had a closed session three or four days ago. And they agreed that these three conditions should be there, and the three conditions are taking over the responsibilities for controlling and training the Iraqi army. This is number one. And number two is taking over the security responsibilities, as in, you know, asking the occupation forces to leave the Iraqi cities, pull out from Iraqi cities. And number three is changing the, demanding that the United Nations mandate should expire every 6 months instead of expiring once a year, so that they would have actually, you know, the opportunity to ask the occupation troops to leave sooner, maybe within the next 6 months, as soon as they can organize the Iraqi forces and take over the security thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened is that in this closed session 3 or 4 days ago, the Iraqi parliamentarians decided to have a session for voting on these conditions in 10 days, which is a week from now. And everyone was, you know, looking forward to that day. And then yesterday they woke up and they found out that the mandate was renewed while they were sleeping in the United Nations without anyone informing them. without anyone paying any attention to the Iraqi parliament. So I think the most pathetic part of the story is that they were not informed at all, and the parliamentarians that I talked to, they heard the news about renewing the United Nations mandate from me. And I'm, just this random guy who's sitting in Washington, D.C., working with a non-profit organization. And I'm calling someone within the Iraqi government, the lawmakers of the Iraqi government, and informing them about the future of their country. So it's really sad to see the situation of disconnectivity.
Well, Riyad, doesn't it beg the question as to whether there is an independent government of any democratic dimensions in Iraq?
This is a very valid question. I don't think many people are not aware of the descriptions of the Iraqi government. It's usually described as the puppet government, the collaborators government inside Iraq and outside Iraq. But the shocking thing is that the U.S. authorities, the occupation authorities, cannot actually deal with more than a handful of people around al-Maliki and al-Maliki himself, the Iraqi prime minister. They can't extend their relationship outside this little small circle. So even this small government that was elected under the occupation and that many people call a puppet government and many people doubt its legitimacy, this government is against the occupation. And you can see that the U.S. Lost all of its control, all of its relationship to this small, circle of people who go every day to the green zone, and they are hiding, and they are dependent on the U.S. military presence there. Even those people are against the occupation. So you can see that, the limitations of the number of people who actually are justifying the continuation of the occupation and justifying more occupation and more military presence. It's just al-Maliki and some few number of people around him who are still in contact with the Bush administration, still sending these unilateral messages to the United Nations without the knowledge of any of the Iraqi parliamentarians, and still stealing the voice of the Iraqi people.
We're talking with Raed Jarar of Global Exchange. He is their Iraq Project Director. And he is quoted, among others, in a story released by the Institute for Public Accuracy today. Let me quote some of the others. The parliament, according to Dr. Jabir Habib, an Iraqi Shia MP close to the al-Sadr group, was supposed to vote on this in 10 days. He said, "We spent the last months discussing the conditions we wanted to add to the mandate, and the majority of the parliament reached three major conditions." Mr. Hassan al-Shamari, a Shia MP representing the Al-Fadila party, said, "We had a closed session 2 days ago, and we were supposed to vote on the mandate after 10 days. I can't believe the mandate just passed without our knowledge." Dr. Hajim al-Hassani, a Sunni secular MP and the former Speaker of the Parliament, didn't even know that the mandate passed yesterday. "If this was true, it is breaking the agreements we had with al-Maliki," Mr. al-Hassani added. "We were supposed to have a meeting with Maliki and other top officials in the parliament during the next couple of weeks to decide what to do with the mandate. This is totally unexpected," says Saleh al-Mutlaq, a secular MP. "Totally unexpected. Another example of how the prime minister is not taking the parliament seriously." Well, Raed, this, if you couple it with the memo that was intentionally leaked, I believe, from the White House just before the summit in Amman, Jordan, the Hadley memo, which undercuts the Maliki regime from the Bush administration's point of view. What do we have here? If the Bush administration has no confidence in their handpicked puppet leader, and if he in turn doesn't observe the basic fundamentals of democratic process, then we've got a bigger mess on our hands than most Americans probably are aware of.
Al-Maliki's government lost all of its support during the last few months. I don't know of any Iraqi who actually still has some hope with this government, or any hope that this government will end up doing something good for the country. What we are facing in the last 3 days is that there are some major changes that are going to happen within the next few days, and that already happened within the next couple of, within the previous couple of days. major people pulled out from the government, like Al-Sadr group, one of the major Shia parliament blocks. They pulled out from the parliament and from the government a couple of days ago.
Riyad, did they actually pull out, or did they, quote-unquote, suspend their participation as kind of a threat?
Yeah. They suspended their participation, but it's an open-ended suspension.
Okay.
And there is another secular group that suspended their participation in the government. It's called the Iraqi Reconciliation and Liberation Front. And today, in fact, it seems that there is this new coalition that is emerging that will end up putting many Iraqi Sunnis and Shia and secular and Kurds and Christians together to work for ruling their country and give an alternative for the Iraqi government. So there is an active planning for having a coup d'etat against the current government. And there are very strong signs that this coup d'etat will happen within the next maybe hours or days. An announcement for a new government that is called the National Salvation Government is expected to happen very, very soon. And there are some signs about this from Al-Sadr group and other Sunni and secular groups. So you can see that many Iraqis are preferring to take some radical steps, some major changes to change the Iraqi government, because it doesn't seem like, depending on, you know, the current government and hoping that the current government will change the situation is working anymore.
Riyad,
people are just losing their hope.
And Riyad, understanding what you just said, that imminently there could be a coup in Baghdad, coming back to the Hadley memo, do you think the Bush administration, either passively or actively, hopes for such a coup because they have concluded that Maliki is no longer capable of delivering for the United States?
Ironically enough, one of the reasons for the total collapse of al-Maliki's government is the Bush-Maliki meeting. In fact, this was the reason given by al-Sadr group a couple of days ago for pulling out or suspending their participation in the government.
That's right.
We don't want to stay in the government because al-Maliki is meeting with Bush. So the bottom line is that the Bush administration lost control over Iraq politically and socially and militarily. They are not actually, you know, playing games or like, you know, controlling the changes in Iraq anymore. They, in general, they don't know what's happening in Iraq at all. And the ongoing changes are just, these leaked memos and, you know, meetings with al-Maliki and cancelled meetings and postponed meetings and all of these things are just signs of how confused and lost this administration is. It's not an administration with a secret plan, a plan B that they will have a coup d'etat or something. It's a lost administration that doesn't know what's happening in Iraq. It just lost Iraq completely. And now what's happening now is totally outside the control of the U.S. administration. I mean, in fact, what we are reaching to now is because of the level of chaos and the level of, violence that the country reached to, and the level of, the situation was getting totally out of control from the American authorities and the Iraqi authorities.
Riyad, we've got to take a break.
I don't believe, that the Bush administration is actually planning actively in a smart way to change the regime or put another one. I mean, they're just lost and they're just, losing the situation.
Yeah, but they haven't figured out that the superpower thing isn't working for them. We're going to take a break and return with Riyad Jarrar. He is the Iraq Project Director for Global Exchange, and he's just offered some pretty powerful observations. If you'd like to join us with a question or comment, do it. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372 puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you have a living trust? Lawyers on Duty is offering a living trust package for just $995. If you're single, only $895. Give your loved ones the safety net by saving them thousands of dollars by avoiding cumbersome legal proceedings. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available and affordable. With over 1,000 living trusts completed locally, they'll work with you to avoid costly probate. Behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, downtown Monterey. Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner.
Tired of that dreaded drive into town for fresh quality produce? The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village has the perfect solution to your problem. Owners Ed Drobnik and Don Bikey have over 50 years of combined experience in the produce business and are passing the substantial savings on to their customers. The Produce Barn offers a wide selection of conventional and certified organic seasonal fresh fruits and vegetables. We also carry a fine selection of specialty candies and snacks, exquisite gourmet gift items, and feature Freedom Meats, savory sausages, bacon, and marinated fresh meats. Heck, we even throw in free recipes. So, whether you're a restaurant, lodge, home chef, or treasured village visitor, stop by the Produce Barn at 13750A Center Street in the Center Street Plaza, behind Wells Fargo, and right next to the Chatterbox. We're open 7 days a week.
The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village, 659-5916. That's 659-5916. The Produce Barn.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Well, we have an accident in the final clearing stages in Prunedale. It's Prunedale Road at San Miguel Canyon Road. This is a two-vehicle accident, a car and a pickup truck involved in this. It is over the shoulder. CHP on scene just taking a report before clearing on out of there. We have a stalled vehicle, SoCal Avenue, just west of 17th Street. The stalled vehicle may be in the roadway. CHP en route to check that out as well. Highway 17, both directions, checking in, stalling, accident-free. You're going to see some sluggish traffic southbound Highway 1 between Monterey and Carmel. Also, brake lights eastbound Highway 25 out of Gilroy into Hollister. And eastbound Highway 129 is slow between Watsonville and Aromas. And eastbound Highway 183, you're going to see sluggish traffic between Cashville and Salinas. This report is brought to you by Mattress Discounters. During Mattress Discounters, free box spring sale. Purchase any Select Sealy or Simmons mattress at their everyday low price and get the matching box spring absolutely free. Mattress Discounters. I'm Diane with Traffic, KRXA 540.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm fascinated and just modestly stunned by the commentary we're getting from Raed Jarar from Global Exchange. He is their Iraq Project Director, and to be clear, he has been in contact with members of the Iraqi parliament. He met with some of them in Amman, Jordan this summer. And what other contacts have you cultivated, Raed, with the elected leaders in Iraq?
I have a continuing relationship with a number of Iraqi members of parliament and other Iraqi officials. And in fact, most of the relationship started last year. I was working with the United Nations on some projects for taking Iraqi leaders to South Africa and other places around the world to put them in contact with other leaders who managed to solve their country's problems and reach the reconciliation among their country's different sects. So I started having relationships with them at that time, but I think what facilitates more relationship with Iraqi leaders is that there is a void of communication between the U.S. and the Iraqis who can't speak English. And I mean, I spent most of my life in Iraq, and I just moved to the U.S. last year. So I can speak Arabic. Arabic is my first language, and I can speak English as well. So I can link the Iraqi parliamentarians to Congress members. In fact, this is most of my work because I'm based in D.C. and most of my work is linking Congress members to Iraqi parliamentarians to let them know what actually is happening within the Iraqi government, because even the Congress here thinks that what's happening in the Iraqi government is what al-Maliki is saying, and what al-Maliki is saying does not actually represent the Iraqi government, does not represent what the parliament is saying, and does not represent what the Iraqi state is saying.
Now, Ryan, I understand it's a very fluid and chaotic situation, but if I had to make a pick, I would guess that if there is a coup or other implosion of the Maliki government, that the person who would most likely surface as a strong-arm leader of Iraq is Muqtada al-Sadr. Is that a good guess?
This is a good guess. Al-Sadr is definitely one of the strongest people in Iraq. But Al-Sadr is usually, he prefers to work with other Iraqis from different sects and different geographic areas. He never proposed himself as an Iraqi leader. And he doesn't want to play that role at all. So Al-Sadr is very strong, and he is taking a strong role in this upcoming change. But the bottom line is that the coming change will end up being everyone in the current government except the Iranian-backed parties, the two Iranian-backed parties, Skiri and Al-Dawa parties, will be kicked out from the government because of this, like, you know, radical change. And like everyone else will be there, and they will try to include other people who were excluded in the last few years because of their you know, political or religious or whatever backgrounds. So it's kind of more like, you know, it's not a big change when you look at the bigger picture. What's happening is actually just taking out a very sectarian and violent force from the government, which is the Iranian-backed political parties, mm-hmm. and trying to, you know, include many other people who are currently in the insurgency or, you know, leaders who were in the previous Iraqi army or in the Ba'ath party or all of these other major powers that are causing the instability. So it's like a step towards more inclusion, in fact.
So, Ryan, can you imagine a scenario where the United States can withdraw without a Vietnam-style evacuation under emergency circumstances?
This is what I'm working for. This is what many of us are working for. The peace and justice movement in the U.S. in general is searching for a way to end this occupation and pull the U.S. troops without reaching to a disaster, without reaching to a Lebanese-style, you know, disaster that where the U.S. waited until the actual disaster happened and pulled out from Lebanon, or a Somalia-style disaster, or a Vietnam-style disaster, or many other different, you know, examples where the U.S. foreign policy waits until, you know, a disaster happens and then it pulls out. All of our work is to pull out the troops before actual big disasters happen, because there is still a space and time for the U.S. troops to pull out and give the Iraqis the time, you know, to rule their country by themselves without waiting for, you know, massive scale revolutions by Iraqis. That will cause the death and destruction, like more death and destruction from both sides.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, you're very well informed. We've got about 2 minutes remaining, and I just want to give you an opportunity to share any other information or observations that you think are important or relevant at this point.
I think there is a lot happening regarding the Iraq Study Group. The Iraq Study Group is a group that was
The Baker Group, yeah.
The Baker-Hamilton Group.
Mm-hmm.
It's being portrayed as a group that will bring up all of the magic solutions to deal with Iraq. But unfortunately, even without waiting to see the actual recommendations that are coming up within the next few days, the process that the group adopted for reaching to these conclusions doesn't seem like the right process. There is an the process including ignoring Iraqi voices. It did not include any of the major Iraqi voices. It did not bring what the Iraqi people want. And I think we will end up having just, you know, yet another unilateral plan that some lawmakers in D.C. Worked on behind closed doors. So that's why I think one of the major problems that we are facing with the policy in Iraq is that there is a majority of Iraqis, between 80 and 90% of Iraqis, are demanding to get their country back, and they want the occupation troops to set a timetable for withdrawing the troops. And I think without bringing these important voices to the table, to start putting a comprehensive plan that will end the occupation and deal with the post-occupation period, we'll be just going in circles and, you know, having these random plans that will end up maybe getting a worse course than the one that we are living now. We shouldn't forget that it's not just about changing the course. It's about changing the course to the right one.
Mm-hmm. And many people say, well, we can't leave because we will create a void where the civil war will just go out of control and hundreds of thousands of more Iraqis will die. How do you respond to that?
Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis or more have already been killed. I'm a half Sunni and half Shia Iraqi, and I know that Iraqi Sunnis and Shia have never had a civil war in their entire history. Opposing to what the mainstream media is repeating usually about Iraqi Sunnis and Shia killing each other for the last, you know, thousands of years. Iraqi Sunnis and Shia know how to manage with their problems by themselves. They just need the time and space to deal with their problems by themselves. No one on earth has the right or responsibility to go and solve the problems between Iraqi neighbors.
Thank you very much, Raed. We're out of time. Thank you for joining us. That's Raed Jarar, Iraqi Project Director for Global Exchange on the Peter... It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2006 Toyota Prius sedan, the hot-selling hybrid that has everybody talking. The Prius has a gas-electric combo power plant, and the gas portion is a 1.5-liter four-cylinder unit. When the light turns green, you start off with electric power, and the gas transitions in very smoothly as needed to accelerate. I was pleasantly surprised when I punched it to jump from 60 to 80 on the freeway, uphill. And it had all the power I needed. Inside, it's roomy and comfortable for a compact with decent cargo space in the rear, and it's got a generous accessory package. One design flaw to me, the hatchback has limited visibility in the rearview mirror. Toyota fixed this with a nice backup camera. You should definitely test drive a Prius before you buy your next car. By the numbers, the Prius gets 51 mpg on the highway, averages 60 in the city. It stickers in California for about $27,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. All the talk about moving forward in Iraq is about moving fast forward. A source close to the Iraq Study Group tells CBS News correspondent David Martin the group will recommend that all U.S. combat troops be taken out of action within 16 months.
During that time, the mission of U.S. soldiers and Marines currently patrolling the streets would change to that of trainers and advisors embedded with Iraqi soldiers and police. Our goal is a change in the primary mission from combat to support, this source said. This must happen, he added, even if the Iraqis don't make the changes we want them to. We have to let these people know they have to get their act together, or we are getting out of there.
Iraq's prime minister, after his talks with President Bush, said his government will be able to take over security responsibilities by June. But CBS News correspondent Jim Axelrod says the White House thinks that's too optimistic.
The president always says he counts on his commanders, and the U.S. commanders talk about 12 to 18 months time frame, not 6 or 7 months. So I suppose we'll find out soon enough if we should file this under that in that folder marked wishful thinking.
CBS News correspondent Bob Orr reports the Department of Homeland Security has given the U.S. financial industry a heads up that Al-Qaeda might be plotting to hack into its databases.
U.S. officials stress that they have not confirmed that this is from Al-Qaeda. They have not confirmed that it's a real threat. In fact, they say there's nothing else in the intelligence to corroborate this as a bona fide threat. What it is a posting on an Arabic website. The intel analysts are doing the prudent thing. They're trying to get to the bottom of that, and they have put the banking industry in the loop out of an abundance of caution.
The weather now matches the holiday decorations across the heartland. In Stillwater, Oklahoma, Bill Van Ness of station KSPI says they're having a full-blown blizzard.
The Weather Service could not remember the last time this part of Oklahoma was hit with one of these. Basically, a powerful storm coming out of New Mexico that has brought all this snow and frigid temperatures. They're saying by overnight tonight this should all end, but anywhere from 8 to 13 inches of snow.
Ice and snow extends all the way to the Great Lakes. The name Tom Vilsack might not ring a bell outside Iowa, but you'll know it by the time the 2008 campaign is over.
I announce my candidacy to be the next president of the United States.
Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack is not exactly a political household name, but he clearly hopes to change that as he becomes the first Democrat to enter the race.
Let's have a campaign of serious thought
about serious problems that our nation faces.
Vilsack called for moving American troops out of harm's way in Iraq and proposed ending dependence on foreign oil by using alternative energy sources. Following the announcement in his early caucus home state, Vilsack hits the road to five other states, including New Hampshire. Peter Mayer, CBS News, Washington.
The price of oil rose above $63 a barrel today. The Dow lost 4 points to close at 12,221. The Nasdaq down a fraction at 2431. This is CBS News.
New Michelin tires on sale from Sears, along with family, friends, and rum balls. Something to be thankful for. With new tires, you can drive to the store to buy the forgotten can of cranberry and the extra batteries. You can go to find the last-minute gift for that last-minute nephew who shows up late with his roommate. With Michelin tires, the holidays just seem brighter.
Get the lowest price of the year on Michelin tires, only at Sears Auto Center. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 12/24/06.
Since you guys have licensed insurance counselors, can you tell me how to break the news to my wife that I just bought a sports car?
That's a real question that was put to the licensed car insurance experts at Progressive Direct. When you call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, we'll answer your questions and help you find the policy that best fits you. So whether your question's unique or typical...
Will I get a discount if I insure both my cars with you?
In fact, you will. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio, available most states and situations.
CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnotta reports on some important new medical advice.
If you're pregnant or plan to be, don't take the antidepressant Paxil. That warning from the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Tough advice to follow for psychiatrists because women in this age range have the highest prevalence of major depression. But at least two studies show Paxil can cause birth defects. Taken early in a pregnancy, it can double a woman's risk of having a child with heart problems. Barry Bagnotto, CBS News, Washington.
In some cases, though, the experts say the benefits of treatment with antidepressant drugs might outweigh the risks to the fetus. A high school girl in Pleasanton, California, was toting around a doll that cries and wets as part of a school project on responsible parenting. She may need a refresher. Authorities say the girl was driving about 65 miles an hour on an interstate when the doll started crying. The 17-year-old was so surprised she drove off the road and crashed into a guardrail. Fortunately, no one was hurt. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Jingle bells, jingle all the way.
Nothing says it's the holidays quite like TomTom portable navigation devices singing your favorite holiday song. And now, through December 3rd, if you buy any TomTom, you get $50 off.
$50 off.
It's the TomTom Give event. You give a TomTom, we give you $50 off any model at any retailer. So give the best portable everyday GPS solution, TomTom. Heck, give one to yourself. Find your way the easy way.
$50 off.
'Twas the days around Christmas, when all through the land, motorists were rejoicing. Happy Honda Days was at hand. The vehicles were displayed in the showroom with care. The Civic, the Accord, the Element, even the all-new CR-V was there. Away to the Accord, I flew like a flash. Spotting the price tag, I knew they would slash. My dealer exclaimed as I drove out of sight, Happy Honda Days to all, and to all a good night.
Celebrate the great deals at your Honda dealer today.
Ladies and gentlemen,
listen.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I continue as your humble host, Peter B. This is what we call the free speech zone. Lines are open for your comments on any topic from any viewpoint, from anywhere within the sound of my voice. Do you know the number? It's 1-888-5-PETER-B. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. And I'd like to hear from you on anything that's on your mind that you think other people want to talk about.
Ain't that a bitch? Yes, it is. Somebody doing something slick. Yeah, they are. Got me wondering which is which. Might as well go up down to ass. Dig a ditch, ain't that a bitch?
Now, I have to say that our last conversation with Ed Girard kind of threw me off kilter. The reason is we talked earlier today about the situation in Iraq, about the high-level meeting between Maliki and Bush in Jordan. Then we talked about shock and awe, the use of aerial bombing, and how the crash of that F-16 has brought it back into focus. Then we talked about the Iraq timeline, the origin of the lies that got us there. And then, frankly, Riad Giraar kind of hit the reset button. Because what he told us is that Iraq has spun further and further out of control at a faster and faster rate than it appears anyone in Washington, particularly in the Bush administration, is aware of or ready to admit. And so we can talk about James Baker's group, the Iraq Study Group, and their proposal to pull back American troops starting in just a couple of months. Or we could talk about Bush and the spin that he's put on it. But all of that seems fundamentally irrelevant. If what Riad Giraar told us is true, and it was speculation, no doubt about it, but his sources in Iraq indicate that the Maliki government could fall any minute now. Not just tomorrow, next week, next year, any minute. And one of the precipitating events is that Maliki went to Jordan to meet with Bush. That in and of itself sent a message to the Iraqi people, or at least to the members of parliament that Raed is in touch with. And you heard his answer to my question, again speculative. Will Muqtada al-Sadr become the true force in the next government in Iraq? And so I invite your calls here. Lines are open. You know the rules. You can talk about any subject. You don't have to limit yourself to Iraq, even though that's been our focus today. But I think that what Riad Giraar told us is a major scene changer, maybe a sea changer. And so I put this question to you. What should the U.S. do if the Maliki government falls in the next few days, weeks, or even early next year? I'd like to see us admit that the cruel hoax of democracy in Iraq has proven to be just that. And there are no pleasant choices. Some people talk about, well, let's just put Saddam back in charge. Sorry. I don't think even he could quell the sectarian forces that have been unleashed by the American invasion and occupation. We tried the strongman of our choice, Iyad Alawi, and that didn't gel. So then we moved on to the constitutional election and the parliamentary elections. And of course, while we pretend that there is a democracy in Baghdad, we know that it was Condoleezza Rice and Jack Straw of Britain who broke the deadlock and selected Maliki as the democratically elected governor, not governor, leader of Iraq. So where do we go from here, friends? A series of Hobson's choices. My last question to Riad Giraar was, what do you say to people who say we can't leave because it will make things even worse? Well, he said that Sunnis and Shia coexisted without civil war for many, many generations. And I understand that there are many thinking Americans, principled people, who don't support the president, don't agree with the way we got into this mess. But they look at it and say, you know, it's not a matter of cut and run or some other hot button rhetoric. It's a matter of what's the way out of here with the least loss of life? American life? Iraqi life? And I, for one, believe that they have equivalent value. What is the way from here? Is there a way forward? And as I put the pieces together, I say, number one, the United States has to admit that we screwed up and screwed up badly. Before anything else can happen, before neighbors of Iraq might come to help us out and help Iraq out, they need to hear an acknowledgement from President Bush that he made serious miscalculations and that the U.S. is willing to acknowledge those mistakes. Now, I see that as a fundamental first step, kind of like a 12-step program, where you have to first admit that you're powerless over whatever it is that's bothering you. And from there, a lot of things that are not apparent from our vantage point today might become visible. Opportunities may develop that are not available to us today because of the intractable position of the United States of America. So that's my first step. From there, I think that we have to find a clean way out of Iraq as soon as possible. And there isn't an easy fix where we can call the UN or call NATO or, you know, bring in soldiers in powder blue helmets. That will not be an immediate solution. But even the Baker Commission is saying that they know that we are a major source of irritation in Iraq and that we need to dial that back by removing American troops, at least to an extent that people notice that that is our intention and that is our trend. And then by finding different ways to bring in other peacekeepers, people who actually know the difference between a Sunni Arab and a Shia Arab, a Sunni Iraqi and a Shia Iraqi. It's going to be a long road. And it's going to be a bumpy ride. Because as a superpower, the U.S. doesn't know humility. And we can't find that humility until it's delivered in humiliation. And I'm sad to say that as an American. But I think it's true. So that's my take. Let's get yours. We're going to take a quick break and return for your phone calls. I've got four lines open, and that means you can call right now and get on the air quickly. 888-5-PETER-B puts you through. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. What do we do now, dude? You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, He cares.
The Monterey Peninsula College Holiday Jewelry Sale is here, starting Tuesday, December 5th through the 7th. It's your chance to buy gorgeous, one-of-a-kind silver and metal jewelry pieces, plus fabulous metal art, also handmade ceramics, over 20 of our most talented artists, with affordable, delicious jewelry. This sale is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, December 5th, 6th, and 7th. Open all day till 7 p.m. at Monterey Peninsula College, 980 Fremont in Monterey. Follow the signs for parking. Don't miss it.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
12-Step Talk Uncensored is a new talk show where we speak openly about the deadly, shame-based disease of alcoholism and addiction. In this country, most of us are affected in some way. Causes, cures, genetics, or willpower. Saturday, 4 to 5, with Sheila Gale, brought to you in part by Italica Fine Leather Purses and Accessories on Alvarado Street, next to Supercuts in Monterey. Italica. Listen Saturdays at 4 with Sheila Gale. 12-Step Talk Uncensored. It's about time.
But we do have a stalled vehicle slowing you down in Live Oak. It's SoCal Avenue, west of 17th Avenue. This is a stalled pickup truck in the roadway there. Also a stall in Watsonville, Riverside Drive at Highway 1. The stall is reportedly in the road, but no further details just yet. So CHP en route to check out exactly which lane it's in. We're going to see some slow traffic eastbound Highway 183 between Cashville and Salinas. Also southbound 101, leaving Silicon Valley, is heavy from 85 to Coyote Creek Golf Drive. It also continues heavy through Gilroy, Prunedale, and into Salinas. Santa Cruz Mountains, both directions of Highway 17, checking in. Stall and accident-free, so there's some good news for you. This report is brought to you by Luxor.com. Your great Las Vegas getaway begins by visiting Luxor.com. Unforgettable days, exciting nights, it all starts by visiting Luxor.com, your website for exclusive offers to the pyramid. I'm Dio with Traffic, KRXA 540.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Lines are open for you. I got two available, 888-5-PETER-B, toll free. That's 888-573-8372. And you can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. Got a note just in the last few minutes from Gail in Coos Bay. Thanks for checking in, Gail. She said, my question is, what's the role of Iraq's president versus the prime minister? We hear little about the president, Talabani. Well, it's not as clean a configuration as the United States, but in essence, Talabani is much more of a figurehead, a ceremonial official, and he did journey to Tehran earlier this week to meet with Ahmadinejad, the leader there. But it's frankly a good question, and I don't pretend to know all the details, exactly what the division of powers and all that are under the Iraqi constitution. But it is my clear impression that President Talabani is a ceremonial figurehead. We go to your calls now, and Roy is on the line first from Carmel. Hello, Roy.
Hi.
How are you?
I've got a solution that everybody will like.
Great. Go ahead.
Well, what it is you remember we had one of the famous Roosevelt fireside chats. Well, I think we need to stiffen up President Bush, tell him this, that essentially you've got to apologize to these people, and you've got to, since you believe in democracy like we all do, you've got to give them three choices. The choices can be something in the order of, we leave tomorrow, we pack up and leave. We want you to vote on this. Or we stay, but we stay in a neighboring country and help you out from time to time. Or we do some other option. And let them choose, because I think the biggest problem with any of this is they're not buying into their government. And if you're going to have, you know, you can't impose democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And they may want something else. But if they vote as a people, and just like with the purple thumbs, and mm-hmm.
So you would do it as a national referendum.
And I think everybody will feel good about whatever happens, and we get to leave.
So you wouldn't work through the representative government. You would go directly to the people.
Yeah, for representative, you don't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the people. So you have, I mean, literally, we get all our interpreters. We flood their country with the speech to the people, not to the representatives or the fake government or whatever anybody wants to think.
Mm-hmm.
You say, all right, people, we're sorry. We did things. We had better intentions. We didn't like the way it comes out. We don't like it. You don't like it. This is what we can offer you. You tell us what you want us to do, and we'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with that?
It's pretty reasonable. I think the big fear is that Bush doesn't want to have any kind of a referendum like that if he can't predict or control the outcome.
Well, it'll show his colors then. If he won't do it, it's, of course, it's his problem because it's our problem now. But, I mean, that's the way out,
mm-hmm.
is to go directly to the people, briefly explain what we tried to do, that we don't hate you, we didn't do this, we thought we were going to do this, we thought this was going to happen, it hasn't happened. These are the options we'll give you that we're willing to do, and whatever they happen to be, but they should be, pulling out immediately should be one of them, hanging around outside the country or somewhere or in our green zone or hiding out.
Mm-hmm.
And helping out only in certain circumstances, or whatever other one they want to pick, which some reasonable people think might be a reasonable thing to do, and let the people of that country decide. And if they decide they want us to hang around and do something, then damn well they better help out.
All right. Well, Roy, let's put this to a test of our people, and we'll let the people of the Peter B. Collins Show react to your proposal.
Well, I hope they think about it. I think it's a win for all the guilt that we might share by let them decide what they want us to do.
All right, Roy, thank you.
All right,
thanks for the call today. 888-5-PETER-B, give me your reaction to Roy's proposal. An apology followed by a referendum with some reasonable choices. Do you want the U.S. just to pull up and leave? Do you want us to stay until certain markers are achieved? Or do you want us to, phase it out over a three-year period, say? That seems eminently reasonable, but I can't imagine the Bush administration would ever agree to it. Maybe you should call Leon Panetta. He's on the Baker Iraq Study Group, and pass that idea along to him, Roy. I wanted to mention that this Saturday I am going to be speaking at the Monterey County Human Rights Day Luncheon, which is sponsored by the United Nations Association of Monterey Bay, and it commemorates the 58th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It starts at noon at the Elks Lodge in Monterey. You can get more information on the web at unamontereybay.org. That's unamontereybay.org, or you can call 831-375-8301. That number again, 831-375-8301. Looking forward to seeing a lot of our Central Coast listeners at the event on Saturday. We go to Carolyn in Tempe next. Hello, Carolyn.
Yeah, hi, Peter B. I just thought I'd tell you, it's been a number of months now, but we, Code Pink in Phoenix, Arizona, we
mm-hmm.
brought one of the Iraqi women who made the trip to the United States to give a presentation and to tell us firsthand what was going on in Iraq
mm-hmm.
and what the Iraqis wanted. And she gave a really interesting presentation. She's a journalist and, of course, speaks English. So that was very helpful. And she just mentioned, she said, Sunnis, she said the same thing your guest did, which is Sunnis and Shia have never ever had a civil war. That doesn't mean they couldn't, get annoyed with each other.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no history of that. And she showed us slides. And when you see what is being done to the Iraqis in our name, because, not necessarily because they want to do really bad things to the Iraqis. But they're in a land where they don't speak the language. They don't have any idea what's going on. So she said what would happen would be, you know, whoever wants to take a shot or two at American soldiers would do so and then flee. And the Americans' reaction would be to storm whatever houses were the closest nearby and bash down the door, and they always hauled off every male in the family, and they were always beaten. And her job, one of her jobs, she worked with a human rights organization in Iraq. This is a highly intelligent, highly educated woman.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it was routine. And she said, you wouldn't believe, there are prisons all over Iraq.
Yeah.
There wasn't just one or this or that or the other thing. And this was just standard operating procedures. And she used to visit the prisons to talk to the people that were hauled off and try and negotiate to get them, you know, released or at least find out how they were doing in this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn, I'm up against the clock here. Sure. Thanks for your call today. We'll talk again soon. That's Carolyn and Tempe. More of your calls coming up in the next segment. 888-5 Peter B is my toll-free number. Thanks for listening to today's edition of the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
This is Laura Perneda, Perneda Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Perneda Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to PrunetaRealEstate.com.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Deborah Lindsay with Tomorrow Matters on KRXA 540 AM, wishing you a safe holiday season and encouraging you to make earth-friendly choices for your celebrations. Join me each Sunday at 2 to match global problems of today with local solutions for a better tomorrow. Remember, the greatest gift we can give is a healthy planet. Tomorrow Matters, right here on KRXA 540 AM, every Sunday at 2.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, O'Reilly!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, Coach, you could strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show every morning from 9 to 10, only on KRXA 540.
And the Peter B. Collins Show continues. More of your calls in a moment in the Free Speech Zone at 888-5-PETER-B. But somehow, our amazing producer, Matt Renner, has done it again. He's got us a telephone conference call with Dick and W.
We got a president so bad, gotta be the worst we ever had. Got the job 'cause of his dad, now we're all in danger.
Hey, W, you heard this one?
I don't appreciate that kind of humor. It's not very funny.
Got us in a world of trouble.
All right, we get it, Peter. Turn that crap off. Oh,
yes, sir. Yes, sir. You going to issue an executive order and send those Homeland Security people over here to control the knobs personally?
Oh, well, they're already infiltrated. Matt works for me, actually. That's how he is able to get me. You're screwed, Peter.
Well, I'm feeling that way. And, Dick, are you with us today?
Yeah. Caught me chilling out here in the bunker. I'm about six cans into a 12-pack, and I'm ready to rock.
Well, it's interesting because you've both been traveling quite a bit recently. I guess any excuse to get out of Washington since the Democrats are going to take control of Capitol Hill. But first to you, the Vice President, you went to Saudi Arabia and then you went on a hunting trip in Florida.
Yeah, that's right.
Were those events linked in any way?
Well, I was hoping to demonstrate some of my manly hunting prowess to couple of the oil sheets over there, but last minute they got called away and they couldn't go, so I went by myself and took a couple of interns with me, and those are expendable.
I see. And you just came back from, I guess you're flying now, back from Amman, Jordan on Air Force One. We're on the secure link. And Maliki, your handpicked puppet in Baghdad, stiffed you for dinner with the king on Wednesday?
Yeah, that was a little confusion. It happened right there. Going back to my history in the past, when I was at Yale and stuff, it was not very unoften, as they say, for me to be stood up on dates.
Yeah.
And study groups. Actually, I stood up the study groups, but with the dates, they stood me up. So it was kind of an old pain, an old wound that was opened up. But I've got a lot of support.
Mm-hmm.
Of people around me, so I got over it.
Now, did you look him in the eye?
Well, you know what they say about them Arabs.
I'm afraid to hear what you're going to say, but go ahead.
Well, it's just like there's the evil eyes and the eye of the monkey and the dangling arms of Legumbre. I don't know if you've heard about that tale. We talked about it a lot in Skull and Bones. And so what I did was I had some contacts put in that made it look like I was looking him in the eye.
I see.
But I was looking a little off to the left.
Uh-huh. Now, did you actually wear that little device that bulges out of your suit where Karl Rove feeds you lines?
I stopped wearing that because it was too obvious.
Uh-huh.
We're giving you the straight scoop right here, Peter.
Well, you can go ahead and tell him, Mr. President, you had it inserted.
Exactly.
With one of your orifices.
Exactly.
The suppository.
It's internal now.
I see. Well, guys, I wanted to get to the bottom of one thing, and that is who's actually in charge. So let me turn to you, Cheney, first. Did you give the president permission to go to Jordan and make deals with Maliki?
I was actually given permission to give him permission.
That's correct. You see, there's a very strict chain of command in my administration. Right above me is Dick, and right above him is Karl Rove.
And right
above Karl Rove is Barbara Bush, my mommy.
I see. it's starting to make a little sense now.
Exactly.
Okay, then, Mr. Cheney, did you get permission first to go hold hands with the Saudi royals and then to go hunting in Florida, or was that just all on your own?
Well, it's part of my deal. They make me do, for every overseas gig, I got to, you know, put the tuxedo on and pose for the cameras. I get a little off time, so it's just part of my contract.
So it's comp time?
That's right.
I see. And did you have a deal like that at Halliburton, too?
I cut any deal I want at Halliburton.
I guess so. Your stock options are worth about $8 million now.
Is that a great country or what?
Yeah. Now, you've pledged to give those proceeds to charity. Have you named the charity yet?
Yeah, I'm gonna name it. I've got some people working on creating the perfect charity to which I can, faithfully give my fortune. So we haven't come up with it yet, but it'll be a subsidiary of Halliburton.
I see. All right, gentlemen. Well, I want to thank you for joining us. It's a minor honor to talk with you once again. Mr. Bush, we heard a commentator last hour tell us that the parliament members in Baghdad are ready to bring down the government, either through a coup d'etat or just by boycotting the Maliki regime. Are you even vaguely aware of this?
Yeah, I am aware of it, Peter. And I just want to tell you what I feel about it. I'm developing a new language to deal with these things. It's sort of keeping in step with my common language that I use to sort of get people on my side.
Oh, yeah, dropping your G's and everything?
Kind of like that, yeah. I just want to talk like everybody else, but it's also about theory and how I put my thoughts into practice. And when you bring it, like, when you ask that question from now on, I'm just going to say, whatever.
I see.
It's because that way it kind of keeps me in touch. But I really could give a crap.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we're just, as soon as we get out of there, it doesn't matter. We're on to bigger and better projects like Syria and Iran.
And Paraguay?
Paraguay's a good one. It's nice down there below the equator.
All right. Mr. Vice President, a final word?
Well, we're just marking time here. They call us a lame duck administration. In a way, we are. We're just marking time here until the next puppet can be arranged.
I see. Well, thanks for your honesty. It's remarkable.
Yeah, what the heck? We're in power. We ain't going anywhere.
All right, Dick and W, thanks for joining us.
Ciao, Peter.
An improbable conversation with Dick and W here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Back to your calls now in the Free Speech Zone, and their lines available. Call us now at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. David in Phoenix, you're next. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. I'm just calling about Roy and his apology and take it to the people.
Yeah, a referendum, uh-huh.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome idea.
Okay.
However, I think we're kind of beyond apology at this point. I don't know how you apologize for all that we've done over there.
Well, I think that you have to send a clear signal to the world, and in particular to people in Iraq, that we recognize that we have screwed it up. Because any other move that we make is not going to be perceived in a manner that can lead to, you know, long-term peace and stability. It's going to be seen as just another cynical move by the United States.
Right. I agree. I mean, I think we need to do what we need to do to fix it, if we can at this point. I would love to erase the last couple of years and, you know, pave roads and build schools and do all of that if we could. But I think the other part is taking it to the people. Of course, I don't think that's going to actually happen, because it happened in with the Palestinians, and when they voted for their government, then people that we didn't want, or the government didn't want to win, actually won, and now we can't recognize their government.
Well,
point,
I understand that, and it sends very mixed, if not hypocritical, signals about our commitment to democracy. You know, like so many things, we want democracy as long as it produces
friendly
regimes.
Right. And that, I mean, I agree. I think Roy, that idea would be the best way to go about it, and say, look, this is your country. You know, tell us what we need to do to help you make it better, and we'll do it. But again, you know, with our government, with our regime, we're not going to get anywhere near that particular outcome.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
All right. Well, David, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, and I'm sure Roy does, too. Let me know what you think. Do you think that if America made a clear apology and then offered the Iraqis a series of options in a national referendum, would that be an appropriate way of trying to give voice to the people of Iraq while acknowledging our errors and preparing to find the exits? I'd like to know your thoughts. And lines are open right now. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Well, another letter has been received from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Tehran. He is the president of Iran. And this is very interesting because I'm looking at an account of this letter that was published in the Los Angeles Times. And the reporter noted, the letter, with its appeal to American mothers, echoed President Bush's address to the United Nations in September, in which Bush ignored the Iranian leadership and spoke directly to the Iranian people about their struggle for democracy. So it's interesting. Here's Ahmadinejad taking a note from the Bush playbook. And in this letter, it's described as striking a confident, self-righteous tone, a little more moderate than the 18-page letter he sent to Bush last May. Here's a quote. I consider it extremely unlikely that you, the American people, consent to the billions of dollars of annual expenditure from your treasury for this military misadventure. He went on to criticize the Bush administration for arbitrary detentions of prisoners at Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo prisons, for curtailing American civil liberties in the name of the war on terror. Undoubtedly, he wrote, the American people are not satisfied with this behavior, and they showed their discontent in the recent elections. I hope that in the wake of the midterm elections, the administration of President Bush will have heard and will heed the message of the American people. Now, I react a couple of different ways to this. One is, it's a PR stunt, and it is believed by some American commentators that this was written by PR people at the Iranian mission at the United Nations in New York and not personally penned by Ahmadinejad. But I do think the tone of it is interesting, and it's hard to refute some of the comments he makes. That's not to say that I'm willing to embrace Mr. Ahmadinejad and his anti-Semitic comments of the past. But I think we have to recognize that this is a guy who understands how to read a situation. And at the moment, it pains me to say this and it pains Bush even more, Ahmadinejad is driving the diplomatic front in the Middle East right now. In many respects, I don't want to overstate that. But he has, I think, an advantage over Bush in that other than the nuclear issues, he's not on the defensive. And indeed, Bush is. And, of course, I was watching TV last night and heard the predictable rejections of this appeal. And it's not that I expect the American people to rally and say, Ahmadinejad, Ahmadinejad, he's our man. But I think it does evidence that our opponents or enemies are able to exploit the vulnerabilities of the Bush administration, which it created for itself. All right, we'll get right back to your calls after we take care of some commercial business here. I got a couple of lines open if you want to join the conversation. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 11 minutes away from the top of the hour. Whichever hour you prefer.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm too scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Let's talk to Carla in Crescent City. Hello, Carla. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, Peter. Thanks a lot. Nice show. I like it a lot. I listen to it every chance I get.
Oh, I'm delighted.
I wanted to just quick comment about the caller that suggested that we let the Iraqis vote and choose for themselves what they want us to do.
Mm-hmm.
I see two problems. They're both the kind of the same problems that we're having here in our own country. Number one, what happens when you get a 49-51% split? You've still got half of the people that are unhappy and doing what you don't want us to do.
Well, fortunately, they don't use machines over there.
Then that kind of leads to the second one. What makes anyone think that elections there are going to be any cleaner than they are here?
Well, I understand your concerns. I do think that based on the polls, it would be overwhelming, the vote to ask the U.S. to leave. It kind of depends which option they might choose.
Mm-hmm.
I also think that while it's a nice idea for us to discuss, I don't believe the Iraqi study group that Baker is running will propose something like this. And I don't think Bush would ever entertain it, as I said earlier.
It leaves it way too open.
Yeah, they cannot handle the uncertainty. And they would rather, I'm sure, well, I'm sure, they would rather embrace some sort of a strongman who would suppress the violence in the country, as opposed to a resolution that would permit people to work it out and end the violence in a way that leads to resolution and an end to ethnic cleansing and some of the other developments that have occurred under our occupation.
Well, working out the problems takes patience and it takes time, neither of which our administration has.
Well, and this is one of the things that I've been commenting on from the beginning. In March of 2003, when we entered Iraq, it was apparent to everyone, not just Iraqis, but to everyone, that we were not planning to stay there forever. And so the occupation had its limits, and our opponents' enemies knew that. And all they had to do was sit back and bide their time, and that people in that part of the world appear to be much more patient than people in this part of the world. And so all they had to do was sit back and say, wonder how long it'll take for the U.S. to lose interest.
Exactly.
And so this was something that the Bush administration should have factored in. And instead, they've tried to turn it on us, who, observing reality and saying, let's do the intelligent thing here. Well, they want to call us cut and run. They want to say that, you know, we don't have the stomach to stay the course. Well, what I don't have the stomach for is to continue losing lives behind a failed policy and a hopeless set of plans, such as they are.
And a bunch of lies to boot.
Yep.
Thanks so much. You have a good night.
Okay, appreciate the call. That's Carla in Crescent City. Now to Billy in Capitola, Mr. Sunshine.
Hey there, buddy.
How are you?
I'm fine. How's your memory?
It comes and goes.
Mine's shot. Because, you know, we talked about this the last time these people voted. And I said at the time on your show that all they need to do is vote on one more question when they're forming their government, and that is, should we stay or go, giving us the cover to do either.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, we didn't do it then, and it's too late to do it now and have it mean anything.
Doesn't it seem like it's almost too late for everything now?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, the fact is that, you know, my answer for what we do now is a shock and awe leave. We actually just leave, like, as fast as we came.
Yeah.
And on the way out, we take out a Sunni and a Shiite leader who's the most trouble, who we know is the, you know, really getting in the way of them eventually getting to peace, one on each side, and we accomplish that even if it means we have to spend a few lives and on our way out, and we're done.
Mm-hmm. I could live with that.
Yeah.
And sure. You know, I do recognize the uncertainties. I don't know how bad the carnage will be when the U.S. leaves.
True.
But I do know the level of carnage and the trend upward that we see as we stay. And it's untenable.
So clearly the irritant that these people don't need so that they can sort of get on with their business.
I think that's a good point. Billy, thank you very much. Anything you want to add?
No, Peter, we're just loving your show as usual. You do a great job, and I don't know, I couldn't fill 3 hours 5 days a week. You're very smooth.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, see you later. That's Billy. And up next we have Will in Lansing, Michigan. Hello, Will.
Hey, Peter.
Thanks for your call.
I just wanted to clarify your use of the term anti-Semitic.
Related to Ahmadinejad?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Semite himself, so calling him anti-Semitic doesn't make sense.
Well, help me out here. Are Persians Semites?
All Arab people and Israelis are considered Semites.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then I'll
withdraw that. I used it in the common interpretation, meaning anti-Jewish.
Any people that consider themselves to be descendants of Noah's firstborn son are considered Semites.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I will look into it. I'm not really sure of the origins of that. But again, my usage of anti-Semitic is in the common vernacular sense that he is hateful toward Jews. And he has expressed that on many occasions, and I reject those comments. I also think that the Western press has overstated some of his comments as being denying the Holocaust, when what he has tried to do is reframe the Holocaust to include all the others who died during that era in an effort to minimize the loss to European Jews and therefore the need for an Israeli nation. And I do understand how his mind works and what factors are feeding into that point of view, but I do reject it. Are you there, Will?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you want to add anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay. Thank you for the call. Nice to hear from you. Matt Renner, my producer, put a note on the screen here. It says, Bush said that troops will stay as long as the Iraq government wants them to stay. Now, this is a modification. Apparently, it was issued today. I have not yet seen the news conference that he joined the Maliki of Iraq in Amman, Jordan. I've read a few comments from it. But this is a modification because it was only at the NATO meetings in Latvia the other day that he told reporters flatly that he will not be bringing American troops home until we have achieved our mission or something to that effect. So this is an interesting nuance. We'll have to look further into the news and see what else Bush had to say. But I think that these are going to be very, very fast-moving times. And I think over the next few days, if the indications we're hearing are correct, the situation in Iraq will become more and more difficult and leave the U.S. with fewer and fewer options. Whether the Baker Commission presents a bang-up BAFO report or not, I think that each passing day, our options narrow further. And when you look back at the last 6 to 9 months, a lot of time has been squandered, lives have been lost, as Bush and friends jockeyed for political position and used the war as a political wedge issue.
Happy trails to you.
Join me again tomorrow, same time, same stations, for the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks for listening.
Happy trails.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family-owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Sunshine. Tonight, I'm walking on sunshine. I'm on a new.
searching. We've got what you're looking for. Sundays, 3 to 5, The Billy Sunshine Show with Pilar.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. A source close to the Iraq Study Group says the goal is to change the U.S. mission from combat to support. CBS News has learned the group will recommend that all American combat troops be taken out of action within 16 months, either moved back to base camps or taken out of the country. President Bush came away from his talks in Amman, Jordan, publicly optimistic. CBS News correspondent Jim Axelrod has more.
Seeking to dispel questions about their relationship after Iraq's prime minister canceled the planned meeting last night, Mr. Bush praised Nouri al-Maliki's courage and vision.
He's the right guy for Iraq. And we're going to help him.
But for Mr. Bush, help for Maliki right now means transferring authority over Iraqi troops currently under U.S. command back to Maliki.
One of his frustrations with me is that he believes we've been slow about giving him the tools necessary to protect the Iraqi people.
But who's in charge doesn't address how that stops Shiites and Sunnis from killing each other.
Maliki confidently predicts that Iraqi forces will be able to take over the country's security by June. About that canceled first meeting, which was widely viewed as a snub, Maliki's aides say the Shiite prime minister just didn't want to talk to President Bush with the Sunni king of Jordan in the room. From the plains to the Great Lakes, winter's first big blast has arrived with ice and snow and howling wind. Many schools closed today, power lines are down, hundreds of flights are canceled, and driving is treacherous. Gino works at a Pizza Hut in Springfield, Missouri.
There's very little visibility outside. I know our drivers are currently taking things as slow as they can for it, and most of the people I've seen driving are driving pretty slow on it. They're actually being careful.
Despite the weather, they'll deliver pizzas as late as midnight. The U.S. financial industry is being warned of a possible Al-Qaeda plot to penetrate and destroy stock market and bank databases. But the warning is based on nothing more than a posting on an Arabic website, and Joanna Gonzalez of the Department of Homeland Security says it might just be wishful thinking.
There's no information to corroborate this threat to the financial or banking sectors.
A civil liberties group is asking the department to hold off on a new system to screen travelers electronically. CBS News correspondent Cabby McCormick has that.
The automated targeting system, as it's called, is due to kick off Monday. It will screen law enforcement files, your travel plans, even credit card details.